Welcome to the Fantastic Four, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And joining me this time is the host of Pop Culture Basement and a man with impeccable taste in football teams, Mr. Mike Jamison. Mike, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How you doing, man? Go Birds.
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
Yes, there's going to be a lot of that this episode, folks, so just buckle in.
Hi, Brett. How you doing?
You're welcome. Thanks for coming out of the basement and coming over to the lounge for a while. I appreciate
I'm so pale. I have to get out of the basement every once in a while. I walk out and shade my eyes from the sun. I'm like, what is this strange orb that I see floating in the sky? No, thank you. Thank you for having me on. We've shared our love for the Eagles on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So yes, it was natural. We'd come on and talk Eagles and maybe like comic books too. I mean, we could do that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of that. All right. Well, listen, man, before we get started, I have to pay the bills here. So if you like this show and many others on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, consider supporting our efforts and become a Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Thanks to Sean Ross and Jay Campbell for choosing the Fantastic Four. Now, Mike, real quick, do you know Sean Ross, by the way? Have you spoken with him? Have you met him?
I have never spoken with him. Okay. He seems like a very nice fellow, but I've never spoken. I've listened to his podcast, but I know of him. Let's say that.
So just judging what you've heard of Sean and everything. So if Sean had to shoot an apple off of Jay's head with a bow and arrow, what do you think the chances of Jay's survival are? Would it just ballpark it?
Let's just say I'd leave my phone to record it to see what happened, but I would not want to. I want to have plausible deniability, so I will not be present. So I will not be questioned by any authorities that might actually have to come and ask people what was going on after the fact. So let me leave that as the answer.
I think that's fair. And Jay, I'm really sorry about this, but yeah, I think I'd have to record it too. I think the best chance is he just misses completely. I think that's the best chance. I think it lands about like 5 feet short, depending on the distance.
And if he doesn't miss, I mean, we record it, then they just re-release the Five Faces of Death again. So
we can slip it right on YouTube.
I'm sure it's be a YouTube series.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get on to the show here. So sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. Now, Mike, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen ingredient and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
I chose Green Arrow, and I want to get it out of the way first. I did not choose Green Arrow because green is the color of the Philadelphia Eagles. No. I did not do that. Green Arrow, I chose, I mean, growing up, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s, Gen X. It means I'm old. But growing up, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man were my favorite heroes. But you always have, as a comic book reader and as somebody who is into superheroes, I think you always have those secondary characters that you like. And mine was Green Arrow. And I don't know if it's because I remember walking with my grandmother in South Philadelphia and going to Kitty City, which was the Philadelphia equivalent of Toys R Us.
Yes, Kitty City. Yes, I've been to Kitty City. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And I remember going there with my brother and my grandmother. She did not drive. We walked everywhere. This is my dad's mom, so we would visit her. She lived in South Philly. I grew up in Southwest Philadelphia. Right. And it was great because we would always sleep over. We would do a Marvel comics puzzle that she had at her house, but we knew that we were going to get a gift when we went there because it's grandparents have to buy you gifts. And I remember once going to Kitty City. I don't know why I didn't pick out the Star Wars story, probably because I had all of them, but I picked out a Mego Green Arrow. And I remember that as a child, that was one of the toys. And the Mego Green Arrow was cool because it had the bow and arrow. Right. From what I can remember, I think a lot of this is shrouded in long ago memories, but I do remember having a bow and arrow, and then moving on to the superpowers, Green Arrow action figure. I didn't have a lot of the superpowers action figures, but I did seek out a Green Arrow action figure. Now, I do remember seeing him on Super Friends. I didn't see it when it originally aired. I'm not that old. I'm not like Rob Kelly Shaggle. But saw it on reruns on Channel 17, Channel 29, again, local Philadelphia stations. You know, and then the 90s hit, and I'm a Gen Xer, as I said. So, you know, the 90s, Seattle, everything got real, man. I wasn't going for those kiddie comics anymore. I had to get serious. And this was the Mike Grell run of Green Arrow, and it was set in Seattle. Hey, superheroes and Seattle. It's 1993. I mean, come on.
Grunge, yeah, absolutely, man.
It was the first comic I got in there near the end, but it was right around when I actually had a comic book store open up near me. So I was able to go into the back bins and I started collecting most of the Mike Grell run. I think I bought the Longbow Hunters. Everybody talks about, and I'm sure you'll know this, I mean, you know, the late 80s, you had Watchmen, you had Batman Year One, you had The Dark Knight Returns. But the Longbow Hunters was another one of those graphic novel collections that a lot of people were buying back then. So that was one of the first graphic novel collections that I had bought and went back, started collecting all of them, and moved into the run that we're going to talk about on this episode. And I've always liked the look. I think Green Arrow has a unique look. I mean, the Robin Hood motif, but any kind of costume that he's had, I think is very unique. Now, I mean, there might be one that we might talk about that I didn't think was that great, but the Neil Adams redesign is one of the more unique character redesigns and
Certainly.
character looks that is out there in comics. For a younger kid, again, I joked about the Gen X of it all, but that attitude that Ollie had, now I can look back at it as a 51-year-old and see how much of a jerk that he can be. But reading those old JLA comics, especially when the Marvel writers who had moved over to DC were trying to inject personality into the Justice League, they used Green Arrow because he was the character that was not like Superman, that was not like Batman, who were always those father kind of authority figures. He was the one who was butting heads with them and questioning why they were doing what they were doing. And I do like that aspect of his character. There are other aspects of his character as I've grown up and as my perspective has changed that I look back and say, Ollie, what are you doing? But
We'll
he's always a
get
character.
into some of that.
Yeah, he's all, but he's always a character that I'll go back to. He's just always been a fun character.
No, I agree. He's, very similar to you. He was a character I gravitated to, and he's always been kind of up there as one of my favorites. Oddly enough, the Mike Grell years are sort of a blind spot for me. I did not read those. I finally did much later, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I knew him mostly from the JLA, like growing up. He was, like you said, he was, like always being drawn by or when he was with Green Lantern. So I knew him like drawn by like either Neil Adams or Dick Dillon, two giants. And always like sort of in a team up situation. He was in Brave and the Bold a lot too. He seemed to be in there every like 10 issues. They throw Green Arrow in there to team up with Batman. So I kind of knew him from that stuff. And he was the guy, like you said, he was the guy who spoke truth to power to the other JLA members and stuff like that. And would butt heads. He classically butt heads with Hawkman all the time. Hawkman, they kind of gave a conservative sensibility to kind of butt heads with Hawk with I was about to say Hawkeye with Green Arrow the liberal firebrand and
Yeah,
everything like that or
you need them both on, imagine them both on Twitter nowadays.
oh God yes yeah you know what those arguments probably would have gotten a lot more testy these days if that was going on now. I mean, somebody would be getting an arrow to their eye or a mace to their head, one of the two. I share your love. I share your love. So I'm excited to talk more about him real quick. Green Arrow, real name, Oliver Jonas Queen. His first appearance was in More Fun Comics, issue 73 from 1941 in DC Comics. And he was created by Mort Weisinger and George Papp. Now we'll get back to Green Arrow soon. In the meantime, why don't you tell us your beverage of choice?
My beverage of choice, you know, I am not, I'm a man of the people. I am not a fancy man. And when Brett and I were talking about coming on the show, he said to me, what drink do you want to, what drink do you think you, that you'd want to talk about? And
Yeah.
I said to him, Brett, I mean, I drink beer. That's what I drink. And I don't know, was this easy for you then when I told you that, or did that make it
I'm trying to
harder?
remember our conversation, but I think, you said you drank beer and it just popped in my head. I was like, oh, well, what can we do with beer? I was like, well, I could do a shandy, we could do something else. And I was like, oh, we should do a black and tan. So I was
Yes.
like, let's do it. It just seemed like a good fit.
Yeah, so
So
that is the
yeah.
that is what I chose, the black and tan. And yeah, I mean it works for me. I mean I'm kind of half joking. I will occasionally sit and have a drink, but it's something very basic, like a Jack and Coke or a
Right.
gin tonic. But I if I'm gonna sit down, especially now we're recording this, it's the summer, if it's a nice Friday night, you go outside. Start the barbecue up, sit down, put some music on, and I'm going to crack open a beer. And yeah, this was a really good suggestion because I hadn't had a black and tan in a while. So this was something that I
Same.
was eager to rediscover, let's say.
Good. Good. All right. Well, we're going to be creating a black and tan very soon. But before we go over our process, let's talk a little bit more about the famous drink in a segment I like to call Secret Porridgeons. Now, did you get that, Mike? I like to kind of explain that to my guests, but sometimes they just instinctively get the pun there. I wasn't sure.
I've only had one drink, so I'm fine. I do get it. I'm okay. I got it.
All right, very good.
But thank you. I mean, I'm not that quick on the uptake, so
Yeah,
thank
well, no, you're doing fine. See, all us Eagles fans aren't stupid. See,
you.
all right. Origin of the black and tan, thanks to AmericanCraftBeer.com, TheTakeout.com, and CraftBeering.com for research and quotes. The history of the black and tan can be traced back to the 17th century England, where blended beers could generate increased profits for pub owners. Stouts were stronger and more expensive than lower octane pale ales, so bartenders could charge more for the drink. The term black and tan emerged in the late 19th to early 20th century and became a particularly associated with the pairing of Bass Pale Ale and Guinness. Now, in American bars, the drink grew in popularity through the 20th century, especially among those looking to enjoy the full-bodied character of a stout with the refreshing lightness of a pale ale. While the drink is beloved in many parts of the world, the term black and tan carries a different connotation in Irish history. It refers to the English paramilitary soldiers recruited by the British government around 1920 to help put down the Irish uprising that led to the Irish War of Independence. The soldiers were called Black and Tans because their uniforms were a mix of black shirts and tan pants. They committed some of the worst atrocities of the Irish War of Independence, including burning villages, torture, abduction, and political murder. Because of this, ordering a black and tan in Ireland is considered insensitive. In Ireland and some surrounding areas, the drink is called half and half. The idea behind the perfect black and tan is to create two distinct layers of beer, a black stout resting upon a golden pale ale. A perfectly poured black and tan, thing of beauty. Concepts of layered beers have led to a number of creative offshoots, like the Black Velvet, which is a Guinness stout layered over champagne, Snakebite in Black, which is a mixture of lager, cider, and a splash of black currant. Black and Blue, which is a blend of Guinness and Blue Moon or other wheat beers. And of course, the half and half, which sometimes used to describe Guinness layered over Harp or other beers. All right. So that's basic history of the black and tan. Did you know that about the, like I knew in Ireland it was called a half and half, but I wasn't aware of why. Did you know that?
I did not know it. I knew that it was
Yeah.
called a half and half. And some people I
Yeah.
used to, one of the bars I used to frequent in my old neighborhood, I had a friend of mine who was a bartender. And when I used to go there, this was 20, 25 years ago, they used to call it a half and half before they started calling it a black and tan. So I only knew that it was called also a half and half, but I didn't know about the history behind it.
Was it an
And
Irish bar or was
no, it
no,
was
just a
not an
regular
Irish
bar.
bar. Just a
Okay.
regular bar. No, it's just a regular corner bar.
Of course it's a corner. It's every Philly bar
I
is on a
cannot
corner. Come
confirm
on.
or deny that there were underage, that we would sneak in my underage cousin into there to drink. The statute of limitations
That's
has
funny.
run out by now.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has. All right. Well, it's so Mike, it's happy hour. So let's make a drink. I call this Black and Go Birds. So Mike, tell our friends what we need.
I mean, first of all, I have to say, go birds. So the ingredients for the Black and Go Birds, and I will be stealing that for football season when it starts,
Bet.
and I have people over. The ingredients, and this is per drink. So you will need 1 12-ounce can of Guinness, 1 12-ounce can or bottle of Yards Pale Ale, 1 pint glass, and it can be a pint glass that has the Justice League on it, like the one that I have, or with an Eagles logo on it that Brett has. 1 metal spoon. Now, I am not going to lie. When I was practicing, and it was great to practice to make these
Practice makes perfect,
over
man.
the weekend, it was not coming out as well with the metal spoon. So,
Really?
and I wanted to, I wanted to impress Brett. This is the first time I've been on the Fantastic Four. So I looked on Amazon, and they actually sell. It's basically a strainer, but it's made for blackened
Yes.
cans.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You have to love the time that we live in. I just went on Amazon and looked up blackened tan spoon, and it had a bunch of already pre-bent spoons, but it also had a strainer, and it was next day delivery. So I was like, okay, cool, I can get this. So I've been using that. I did use the spoon, but it wasn't coming out as nice as I wanted it to. But the strainer works really well. So one metal spoon or one strainer that's on Amazon.
Very good. Very good. All right. So, would you like to tell our friends how we make the black and tan? Or
Yes,
black and go birds? What am I
the black and
saying?
go birds. What are
Black
you?
and go birds. Come on.
All right. So first, you pour the Yards Pale Ale directly into the bottom of the glass. This will release enough carbonation to create a little foamy head. Fill the glass halfway, let it settle for a minute, then place a spoon rounded side up inside the glass with the tip of the spoon pressed against the edge of the glass. Open the Guinness and slowly, carefully pour the stout over the spoon so it fans out over the edges of the spoon. This allows the Guinness to settle on top of the Yards Pale Ale in an even layer, creating a divided black and tan. You can buy a special black and tan spoon or strainer, or even bend a regular spoon back so you can fit it inside the glass, but any relatively flat spoon will work.
Yeah, so I bartended for years, and basically anytime you carry Guinness on tap, because Guinness uses a different tap system, what they have attached to the tap is they have a little spoon. It's a round spoon. It has a little
Like a
what's the word?
divot,
Like a
like a
divot.
divot.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can set it right on top of the pint glass, and it sets there if you want to make a black and tan. I always hated those spoons. I just didn't like the way they work. So what we used to always do is we used to just take a regular spoon that we'd use in the dining room or the bar. And I would just bend it. I'd bend the spoon part backwards, so it kind of form an L with the rounded part, up, making the lower part. And that way you could kind of really dip it into the glass that way. And I always did them that way because you could do it a little quicker that way, and just for expediting the whole situation and to keep you moving. And I just found it settled a little bit quicker that way because it was so low, as opposed to if you're doing it. But again, use what you can basically use any spoon you have at home. All I would say is, when you are pouring it, by the way, when you pour in the your pale ale first, now we're using Yards because it's a Philly beer. Although, truth be told, I live in the DC metro area, and I was unable to find Yards anywhere. I could
Oh,
not
wow.
believe it. I thought it would be easy to find. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I did the next best thing. I got a Yingling. So, if I had to get something, I got a Yingling, which is technically a lager, but it's a heavier lager. It works kind of like a pale ale. So I used Yingling for my first one. I used a pale ale for the one I took pictures of, the one I'm having now. But earlier I used a Yingling for that one. And if you have any spoon at home, like I said, just make sure you have it. You want to make sure the spoon is touching the inside of the glass. It doesn't have to be perfectly straight. It can tilt a little bit because it's around the spoon anyway. But when you're pouring the Guinness in, and again, if you're doing it this home, the best thing to do is get the can of Guinness. Is that we're using a can
Yeah,
or a
use
bottle?
the
Yeah.
can.
Yeah. Use the can, but pour it slowly and just kind of take your time. And when you pour it in, going back to what I was saying before, when you pour in your pale ale first, pour it in a little quicker so it does have some head on it, and let it settle. But it's okay if there's still a little bit of a foamy head, because that's all just going to rise to the top anyway. And it makes for a nice, because then you have the tan, You have the black, and then you have a white foamy head at the top. So it looks really nice.
I will say that when I was looking
Yep.
online, they do sell the spoons with the divot already in it that you can also use.
Oh,
That
yeah.
you, yeah, so they do. But, and you're saying you're going to put the picture. You saw the picture that I put
Yeah. No, I
on
have them.
Facebook,
I have them.
because
Yeah.
I was impressed. That
You
was after I bought the strainer and I did it, and I was like, oh, look at this. This is really nice. So I needed to get photographic evidence of
Oh,
that, of
very
how
good. Do you
good
have
it
the
was.
strainer handy right now?
I
Or is
do. I
it,
do.
let me, this is great for an audio medium. There we
Yes, I
go.
know. So I'm
Yeah,
showing it to you.
that's, I was going to
But yeah.
say, I figured it looked like that. Yeah. For those in the lounge, first of all, I'll put that on the, do me a favor, take a picture of that and send it
I
to me.
will.
I'll
I
post on the
will.
website. But it basically looks like a small, you know what it kind of looks like? It looks like an offering plate, like if you're a church, you know, like the little
Yes.
offering plate they
Yes.
pass around. And you just set it right on top of the glass when you pour it together. So yeah,
I will
perfect.
just say, I mean, I now that I bought it, I have to use it. So
Yeah, yeah.
I will be going tomorrow after work and buying another 4-pack of Guinness, another 6-pack of Pale Ale, so I can make some more black adjust. I'm gonna impress. I was making these, the picture I sent you, I was making them on the day of the World Cup final. So my son had friends over, and I
Oh,
was like, I was
that's
like,
right.
guys, come over here. I'm gonna show you something. They were impressed. They liked how
Oh, good. Yeah, good.
it
Yeah, it's always fun. Anytime you layer a drink, it looks cool, you know.
looked.
Your B-52 shot or just, you know, whatever you're doing. It's really nice. So very good. All right. Well, listen, well, Mike and I are going to enjoy our Black and Go Birds as we watch the Philly special about 52 times. Now, everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along. Listen to this promo break.
Maybe I can do a podcast about comic books. No, everybody does a podcast about comic books. Maybe I can do a podcast about TV shows. Now, there's a lot of podcasts out there covering TV shows. I know a podcast about movies. It's too general. A lot of people do podcasts about movies. Star Wars movies. No, everybody talks about Star Wars movies. Need to do a podcast that covers movies and television shows and comics and all the pop culture I loved growing up. Wait a minute. The Pop Culture Basement Podcast, hosted by me, Mike Jamison, covering all the pop culture that I consumed and that we consumed during our formative years. Now available on all reputable podcast platforms. Join us down in the basement.
And we're back. We tried reenacting the Philly special with the bar patrons, but unfortunately, Shag kept fumbling the ball and Rob can't throw. Now that we've had a chance to taste our Black and Go Birds as if we weren't already, what'd you think, Mike?
Well, first of all, I'm laughing about Rob and Shag, but I would I threw out my arm just trying to underhand the football back to Brett. So I mean, I can't really laugh that much. What do I think? As I said, I haven't had one in a while, and I was only half joking that I had that the strainer contraption, so I have to use it. But I am going to be going tomorrow at the work to buy some more supplies for the black and
Yeah.
tan, because it is, I forgot how first of all, it's always fun, as you said, you can, when it's almost like you're performing a trick when you're
Yeah.
making a drink.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
my son is still only 15, so now instead of getting impressed with me
So he's just
getting
on whiskey right now. He's not really drinking them. Yeah, okay,
yes,
gotcha.
I mean, Jamison, Jameson, you have to start them young.
Yeah,
But you know, I used to impress him with my comic book knowledge. Now I'm like, here, look up, come here, boy. I'm going to show you how to make a drink. But yeah, I've enjoyed it very much. I like separately. I like Yards. I like Guinness. But Guinness is not something that I will always grab just to go outside and sit down and
Right.
have a drink. It's heavy and it's good, but it's just
Yeah.
heavier.
Yeah.
But I do like that balance of the pale ale and this together, and it's nice to look at also, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, it's nice. It's a good drink if you like the taste of Guinness, but don't want to drink Guinness all night. You know, you can kind of, you can have a couple of these and they're easy drinking. It's not like some cheap lagers where you got to drink it in 5 minutes or it's warm and, you know, tastes gross. This just settles nicely and it, and you still have, even when you're half done with it, you still have a little bit of that color separation too at the
Yes.
bottom. You know, the Guinness starts to creep in more and more. But you still have some of that color separation. So yeah, it's a nice smooth drink. It is probably, it's a little more of a winter drink, I'd say, winter and fall than it is a summer drink. But you know, when you're down in the basement or you know, or you're at the lounge, I mean, we have all types of rooms at the lounge.
Well,
So
the good thing is in the lounge they have all the 65-inch televisions, and
exactly.
they're showing replays of both Eagles Super Bowls up until
Yep.
the football season starts. And if you're in the
Exactly.
basement, I'm usually doing the same thing also. If it's not
Yep.
the Eagles highlights, it's from the 2008 World Series.
I have a buddy, so we basically communicate almost solely through Instagram. And basically all we did last year was send each other Eagles porn. And what I mean by that is just basically, I think we sent each other the Jalen Hurts throw to Devontae Smith, the touchdown, the
The
dagger,
dagger.
probably about like 400 different ways, you know, like sometimes, oh, here it is with music, here it is in slow motion, here it is from the other angle, here it, you know, and I never, we'll talk about this more later, but there's two plays I'll never get tired of watching, the dagger and the Philly special. I can watch
Course.
those 1,000 times a day. And yes, absolutely, the lounge has those on repeat. Especially as we're only about what 48 days away from the season starting, right?
Yeah,
Like
unfortunately,
that.
when we're recording this on the news this morning, I was talking to my wife about this. They just had one of those that they were doing the weather, and of course they had to do the, oh, it's only 21 days of 8 o'clock sunsets left, and there's
Yeah.
this many days till Labor Day, and I believe it was 52 days until the Eagles start.
Oh
So
yeah.
I
Because
think
I
it's
guess they
52.
go by the first game of the season, which is like a Thursday or something
But
like
I
that. Yeah,
think
sure.
training camp starts next week, so.
Yes, it does. It does. Yeah, but again, by the time this comes out, it's going to be closer to about 20. Yeah, it'll be like might be even less than 20 days actually by the time this comes out. So very good. It's exciting. But we'll talk about that more later. So while we enjoy our black and go birds in the Fantastic Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we will be discussing that involves Green Arrow is Green Arrow, issue 81, publisher DC Comics, cover date December 1993, on sale date November 2nd, 1993. The cover price was $1.75. Title is Home Alki. Is it Alki or Alki?
I had to look up when
Or Alki? What is it?
there is a neighborhood in Seattle. There is an,
Okay.
I don't know how you pronounce it. It's either Alki or Alki.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that's what, and
That's got to be
I
it.
was expecting you to tell me what the title meant. When I read it, I said, okay, am I reading this right? And I'm trying to read it fast. Like, does it mean something? Is it wordplay? So yesterday I just looked up Seattle Alki or Alki, and it's a
It's a neighborhood in
neighborhood
Seattle. Okay.
in the city of Seattle.
That makes more sense. So I apologize to our friends in the Pacific Northwest that I don't know how to pronounce
They
this
won
neighborhood. I'm sure it's
the
nice
Super
though.
Bowl this year. They're fine. It
That's
don't
true. That's
worry
true. Yeah.
about it.
All right. Well, writer Kevin Dooley, penciler Jim Aparo, inker Jerry Fernandez, colorist Gina Going, letterer Tim Harkins, editor Scott Peterson and Darren Fincesno. Cover artist Jim Aparo and Jerry Fernandez. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics and DC Fandom. Mike, do you want to tell our friends at Fantastic Lounge what the story is all about?
I sure do. Green Arrow stops a young thug from vandalizing a building, but he is emotionally affected by the fact that his girlfriend, Dinah Lance, also known as Black Canary, has left him and won't likely take him back. He struggles with whether or not to stay in Seattle, knowing that Dinah is still there. Maybe there's no reason to stay without her. Meanwhile, Nuklon and Shrapnel, yes, it's the 90s, are battling on the streets, apparently in dispute about a lady's affections. Oliver is drawn to their battles, but finding himself unsure of how to deal with superhumans, knowing that his arrows won't do much damage. And this is also because it has been a while since he's actually fought any kind of superhuman. Of course, the battles collateral damage upsets Oliver because it destroys homes and properties. Oliver tries to intervene, but he is outmatched by the superhumans, and they refuse to listen. The fighting damages a nearby gas station, but the street is flooded with gasoline. Oliver threatens them that if either of them moves, he will ignite the gas. Nuclon complies, but Shrapnel makes a run for it. Knowing that if he loses his arrow, it will mean that he can never come back to Seattle, he knocks it to his bow and blows up the gas station. After that, the woman who the superhumans were fighting over makes a pass at Oliver. It must be the goatee. I don't know. It must be the goatee, man. Yeah. An action which is seen by Dinah, only serving to put salt into his wound. Ultimately, he tells Shrapnel to leave the girl alone if she says she wants him out. Nuclon to fight only for people who want to be fought for, and the girl to just leave him alone. His targets, however, respond with crippling insults that shake his confidence. Still, Shrapnel leaves, Nuclon allows himself to be arrested, and the girl leaves. Oliver is then confronted by Lieutenant Cameron, who accuses his brand of costumed vigilantism of bringing supervillains to Seattle. Oliver simply states that he's leaving the city because he has no reason to stay without Dinah. Sadly, he says goodbye to Seattle and goodbye to Dinah with it.
Yeah, we made that way too long. That's longer than the issue, I think. Sorry about that. All right. Anyway, okay. So I'm going to have some questions for you, but we'll start with the cover. It's I will say this. I think it's I do like the cover.
It is one of my favorite covers. Yeah, love Jim. I mean, I will say I love Jim Aparo. Mm-hmm. He's up there. If he's not my favorite comic book artist or DC artist, he's up there. It's, you know, it's either him, Neil Adams, Tim Sale, but Jim Aparo is my child. Jim Aparo's Batman is my Batman, and his Green Arrow is my Green Arrow. And this cover, I've had it as my phone wallpaper before. I've had it as my computer wallpaper. And I remember getting it because I had a subscription to Green Arrow. I remember getting it and being struck by the cover. I just think it's an amazing cover. It's not Jim Aparo in his 70s heyday.
No.
But it's still a great cover.
Yeah, it's a great cover as this is the beginning of a storyline called Crossroads for him, and it's sort of like a new chapter. This is kind of the beginning after Grell left the book, so it's a nice way if you want to. It's a great jumping on point, or it's a great cover for a jumping on point because it looks like it could be a first issue cover. You know, it has that look to it. So basically, you have Green Arrow sort of legs akimbo firing off some arrows at on a rooftop. You see a couple, like some people are shooting at him. You see the blast going by. There's a big moon in the background, and it's a Dutch angle cover. So it's tilted. And at the top, you have the DC logo. You have the Green Arrow title, and then you have Crossroads. And this is chapter one of that. So I like this costume too. It's pretty simple, but I dig it. It's very Robin Hood-esque. It's very kind of bare bones. I think he's still, like I said, and you can talk more about this, but this whole series, this sort of 80s to 90s series, was very street level. He wasn't, like you said, he wasn't going up to the JLA satellite. He wasn't fighting supervillains. He was, you know, he was dealing with thugs and drug pushers and murderers and things like that. So it was assassins and stuff like that. So I really like the cover. Now, did you have anything else you wanted to say about the cover first?
I was going to agree. It's a very simplified. I think that he took Grell's design because Grell, mm-hmm. as you just said, had brought him back as a street level. Christopher Nolan would have loved Mike Grell. He brought him back to street level, very, very realistic vigilante. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Green Arrow has always been, his costume has always been inspired by Robin Hood.
Sure.
But Grell gave it a little bit more detail where it had the stitching and all that kind of stuff. Aparo makes it a lot more superhero looking, but it's still very cool. It's not the classic Neil Adams Green Arrow outfit with the bare arms, but I like how in Aparo's hands it looks. He has the mask on Ollie, which during the Grell run he did not wear the mask. I don't know, you know, the whole suspension of disbelief with Clark Kent Superman, it really works with Oliver Queen.
Oh yes,
because, you know, when you just happen to have long haired Robin Hood goateed superhero and also millionaire and then later newspaper columnist and just citizen that people are dumb enough to not realize that that's Oliver Queen. Or maybe they just don't care and they're like, we know.
Yeah, I think there's there's a lot of that. They're like, it's fine.
But it's a great cover, and I know we're going to get into it. But as you said, it's also a new the Green Arrow at the top is a new design to show that this is now it's a new logo to show that this is now it's going back to being a superhero comic. I have a very weird history with subscribing to comics back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, it's not weird. Some of it's good. I subscribed to Spider-Man, and the second issue in my subscription was the beginning of the Todd McFarlane, Dave McAleenan run. So that was
nice. There you go.
But with Green Arrow, I subscribed because, as I said, I had gotten into the Grell run, I said to myself, I'm going to subscribe to this. I like Green Arrow. This is going to be my comic. And I think this was about the second or third comic that I got was, hey, Green Arrow's getting thrown back into the DC universe and Mike Grell is gone now. And we'll talk about it in a little bit. But as I said, I saw this and you would get the comics in the mail and hopefully they wouldn't be destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. They had the brown wrapper over them, right?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But opening this up and seeing that cover and knowing it was Jim Aparo, I was like, all right, cool. Hey, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's see what this is going to be all about. And, we will discuss, what the issue is.
Well, the issue itself is pretty cut and dry. I mean, especially we almost gave it too much service on that, on the recap. So it opens with a splash page of shrapnel, which, Not Aparo's finest work.
No, not at all. Now, did you know who Shrapnel was?
I did, Art. Well, I mean, did not. Do I know who he is now, or you mean at the time you read this?
When you read it just now, like, did you?
No, I knew who Shrapnel was.
Right. I did not know. I had to look up Shrapnel, and I had to look up Nuklon also.
Okay.
I joked around when I was reading the. I was joking around when I was reading the synopsis of the story, but it's very not to me. Shrapnel was very 90s. They're telling you right away on this first page that this is going to be this isn't the Green Arrow that we've had for the past 4 or 5 years. No. Yeah. Green Arrow is now in the 90s.
Yeah. So Shrapnel's just there in the city, and he's just firing off shrapnel for some reason because it turns out he's mad because some girl won't give him the time of day. He thought she liked him. And in the meantime, you have Green Arrow is in an alley taking on just some guy who's just like, you know, your typical like 90s, riffraff. You know, he's wearing like a magenta striped shirt with a green jacket because there's not enough green in this issue. And some blue jeans, and you know, he's got earrings, of course.
I was gonna say he's got an earring.
Yeah, he's gotta be bad news because he has an earring. And you know, Arrow's taking the time to point an arrow at him when he's just basically he's spray painting like Casey loves A, and then he didn't get to finish it. I guess it was gonna be an M. I was trying to think vaguely if I knew, like, if there was any significance to those initials.
I was trying to think too. I couldn't come up with anybody.
If there is, I can't, there's probably something obvious and I just can't even think about it, but whatever. So he kind of roughs up this guy, fires a couple arrows at him, knocks the spray paint. So it spray paints the dude in the eyes. And it's just
can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Is Kevin Dooley, is he trying to be funny, or is he just laying it on thick when Arrow says, I'm reading from the comic, you're messing up my town, creep, and using harmful fluorocarbons. Yeah. Well, yeah, Green Arrow had a reputation as we said, he was the hippie.
Yeah, he's an environmentalist,
He was the hippie of the Justice League, and he was, of course, he was going to be an environmentalist. So I don't know if Dooley is and doing it as kind of like an in-joke, or if he's trying to play this straight, because if he's trying to play it straight, it's coming off as really on the nose. Like, we get it. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose, and then but he's also kind of being fascist at the same time. I don't know, like what I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what Kevin Dooley was doing with this issue,
Oh, that's the
but
conundrum of Green Arrow.
yeah. So it ends after he scares this guy out of the alley. He goes up on the rooftop with lightning crashing, and you can
I
see the
will
Space
say,
Needle in the
I
background.
do like that. The
Yeah.
shrapnel is not Aparo's greatest moment, but I do
No.
like the Space Needle in the distance with the lightning crashing down. I think that's a cool page.
Yeah, it's a sharp picture, and then he's starting to think back to all the stuff that happened. He cheated on Dinah, and then when Dinah was, I guess it's a very controversial storyline. I think
Yes.
even then, Dinah is assaulted, and I don't know. I'll be honest. Like I said, the Grell run is a little bit of a blind spot. I don't know if this was. Is this sort of forgotten now? Is this still part
I
of
think so. I mean,
continuity?
he's basically recapping that the
Yeah.
whole
I'm sorry.
incident with.
I meant like now. Like, is this still look this? I never hear them reference this, or
No, and
they
I'm
just
not gonna
kind of
lie, I
accept this.
don't read a lot of the current DC stuff,
Okay.
so
Okay.
I bet you that it's kind of forgotten. Because I think
Yeah.
Black Canary has been brought back into the mainstream DCU because in
She
that.
is. Yeah, she
In the
is.
Longbow Hunters, when she was assaulted, she lost her canary cry, and
Oh, okay.
that was one of
Okay.
the big things. And Grell is another one who I think, when this was written in the late 80s, he was seen as somebody who, he was taking Green Arrow back to the streets, and it was going to be
Right.
more. We were joking about him being an environmentalist, but he was saying big things about drugs and about sexual assault and everything like that.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of not that he fridged Dinah, but in one of the first issues, you're taking away
Yeah.
your superpower and making her normal while Ollie gets to be the one who still gets to go out there and be the vigilante. So
Yeah.
I think that
It's
was coming from a
damn
lot of,
close to being fridged. It's damn close to it.
The
Yeah.
fridge was open. The fridge was
Yeah, yes,
definitely open.
she was in the fridge. They just hadn't quite closed the door. So yeah, it
Yeah, they
was
just let
not.
the crap.
Yeah, not to mention what they did to her hair too. That the hair thing was terrible too. It
I
just
remember
yeah.
those. I remember those hairdos back. I think my mom had a hairdo like that back in the early 90s. So,
the hair. Oof. Yeah, for those she had like sh really short black hair instead, and she was going out fighting crime like that too. She wasn't wearing like a wig anymore or anything like
got
that. It
rid of the
wasn't.
jazzercise Black
Like
Canary
big the
outfit.
big yeah. But even before, I think wasn't she wearing like a black outfit with like big shoulder pads or something for a
Yes.
while too? Yeah.
Yes. It was the 80s.
Yeah. Oof.
Jane
Yeah.
Fonda.
And then Nucleon shows up to fight Shrapnel, and that's when I'm reading this, I'm like, wait, that's the Infinity Inc. guy, right? And I'm
Yes.
like, what is he doing here? And they never really explain what
No,
they're
I was going
doing
to say,
here.
they don't
Yeah.
explain why they're in Seattle, why this is happening,
Yeah.
why
Yeah. Yeah.
those two are fighting each other.
Yeah.
It's just.
And then you cut back to you cut back to Green Arrow, who's running through the city trying to get there. There's some very like Frank Miller-esque. I'm wondering if the inker was doing some of the heavy lifting. Again, this is Jim Aparo. He's getting up in age at this point.
Yeah,
This is
he
not,
might have
again,
been.
this is not his finest work, but I feel like there is definitely a 90s tinge to this artwork, which has got to be the inker.
Yeah, there is. And it's
Yeah.
not Aparo, around this time, and I think into the mid-90s, was also still doing a little bit of Batman. And I remember he was being heavily inked then. And
Yeah.
again, this is not me. It's not a criticism. As you said, he was getting up there in age.
Yeah, no,
So
he was
this.
pretty old at this point, yeah.
Yeah, this was not mid-70s Aparo, but at least here, I think the inker is doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but it
Yeah.
doesn't look as bad as some of that Batman stuff in the 90s did.
Yeah.
It just did not
Yeah.
work. But I mean, is he trying to, on page 9, is he trying to catch a taxi as he's
I
running?
think so. I think he was trying to catch taxi, couldn't get the taxi. Then he starts running. There is a sharp picture in the middle of that page with him like sort of leaping
Yes,
over a
leaping
cab,
over. Yep.
and you have like cars. You can tell that it's ra again. It's Seattle, so of course it's raining. The office buildings in the background, they're all lit up because it's nighttime. It's a neat picture. It looks very Frank Miller-esque, that
It looked
particular
very Frank
image. Yeah,
Miller-esque, yes.
yeah. And so he comes. Arrow comes upon this fight between these two guys, and the cops are there. So he fires a couple arrows at him, which really doesn't do much of anything. He's trying to break up this fight, but he realizes these guys are a bunch of supervillains. And the whole time, by the way, the whole time this is going on, Arrow has an inner monologue, basically just whining the whole
He is
about how
just
much he
woe
hates
is me.
everything. Yeah, he is very. He's very being very emo in this
This is
in this
why I want to
issue.
know. I want to know if Dooley is laying it on thick for this issue. And as you said, this was like an introduction to, if somebody was picking this off the shelves, this was okay. Green Arrow is back. He is a superhero. He is firmly now entrenched into the DC universe. But we have to let you know what was going on beforehand. And right before this, in the storyline, he had kissed another woman. I'm not minimizing that, but and Dinah had caught him, and they were throughout Grell's run, because famously in Grell's run, he was treating Oliver as normal age. You know, Superman and Batman are always famously 29, 30 years old. Oliver aged. He was in
Yeah,
his
he was supposed to be a
40s.
little older, right? In his
Yes,
40s,
and
yeah.
he was, and that was. He made a point of that during his run, that he was an older superhero and he was in middle age and he was thinking about having kids, and he and Dinah tried to have kids. Dinah, because of what happened to her in the Longbow Hunters, could not have children. And this was a running theme that was going through the book. And then with a younger, I think, street girl that they had tried to help, who liked Oliver. Oliver didn't realize all these women like Oliver, and he doesn't realize any this guy. It's again, it's got to be the goatee. But then of course he gives in the temptation, kisses her, and Dinah catches them, and this is the aftermath of that. But yeah, he's basically, as all this is going on, he's just whining about his love life. It's like, Ollie, you brought this on yourself, man. You brought it on yourself. Stop whining. Suck it up.
He 100% always brings this on himself,
He
pretty
always
much.
does. Yes, he does.
He's a, and again, he's a, you know, it
He
made
says
him.
it. He says it in the book where he says, "I'm the." I mean, with the riff on the Wolverine line, "I'm the best I am at what I do, screwing up my life."
That's true. He owns it. He always ends up owning it eventually. It's usually too late. But
Yeah.
he
Yes.
yeah, I mean, he was you know, he was very unique for a while in DC because he was a very flawed character. And they sort of embraced that with him. And I think it got to be a thing where every writer, you know how like in Marvel, every writer would jump on Daredevil and just try to see how bad they could make his life. I feel
Yes.
like people did that with Green Arrow too. They're like, well,
Yeah.
how can he screw up? You know, how can he screw up, but people still kind of like him too? You know, like how far can
It's
we push
almost
this? You know, because,
like the old Looney Tunes cartoon when the paintbrush comes down and the characters were aware of what was going on. I just imagine Green Arrow like, oh great. Okay, now what's gonna happen to me now, like with this writer coming on? But that is why, going through at the time when I was buying these comics and when I was going through, and I'm not diminishing the Grell run because I'll still revisit Longbow Hunters and some of his stuff, and it's very good. It is, for its time, it is, you could feel the influence of what comics were going through at that time with Dark Knight Returns and Batman Year One. So comics were growing up. It was the 80s. It was the grim and gritty 80s, and Green Arrow was a part of that, and Grell was a part of that. But one, his art. Now he didn't. He when he started writing the regular series, he did not do the art. There were a bunch of different artists, some good, some bad. Dick Giordano was on there for a while. Rich Hoberg was on there. But the stories were always good. I did like Grell's writing. But yeah, I think that's why I liked Ollie also, is because, and it's the same thing a lot of people say it with Spider-Man. Why has Spider-Man been so popular all these years? Well, it's what you would be if you were a superhero, because he has all the problems. And that's another character where I feel like sometimes they go overboard with giving him, instead of bad luck, they just put misery upon Peter Parker. But the thing with Ollie is he felt like a real person. And that's why I like the character, for all of his flaws. And he would acknowledge his flaws, and not just in the Grell run, from even before that and after that. He was a hero that he was not perfect, and he knew he would screw up, and he knew that he was just a regular guy amongst gods, but he still fit in because he had his
He
place, and that's why I liked him.
was a John McClane type. You
Yes,
know,
yes.
he was a guy who would he'd win in the end, but he'd get his ass kicked. Yes.
Yep.
Very nice. You know, he usually didn't come away from this stuff clean. You know, he wasn't, you know, super ninja Batman or anything who, you know, nobody could touch. And he wasn't a goody-goody or anything like that. Yeah, he'd get his butt kicked, but he wouldn't give up, and he'd always, in the end, he'd do the right thing. But just sometimes he had to go full circle for that to
And he got
happen.
to go
But
home to, or fight next to, a hot blonde girl
yes,
in Russia. I mean, come on.
he always had the hottest girlfriend who
Switch
he, you know,
the
who broke up with him 50 times, but you know,
Yes.
he always went back. So yeah, I love Black Canary. I mean,
Do
I
I. I
think
do too.
that's probably half the reason too. It's just like, oh my God, you got Black Canary. Look at that. You know, she's the
Yep.
best. Yeah. So anyway, so this Nuklon, it's just, you know, Nuklon and Shrapnel fighting, and then Green Arrow gets in the way, and Shrapnel almost kills him. And then Nuklon, I guess Nuklon's trying to do the right thing here. He's a good guy, but he's kind of a moron. And they're just causing a lot of property damage. And some of the onlookers are just sort of enjoying the show, basically. Is that supposed to be Dinah on
I
page
think so. I know which page you're
13?
talking
Is
about.
it 13?
I
Yeah,
thought
13, the panel where she's holding the groceries. Is that supposed to be her?
at first that he was just looking into the crowd and imagining that it was her.
Right. Yeah.
But when I was just looking online to see if there was anything else I could find out about this issue, and in a couple of the synopsis of the issue, it says that it's her, that she
Okay.
turns and walks
Okay.
away, and she has the look. I mean, they show her again looking
Yes.
disappointed when
Yeah.
the blonde bimbo comes and kisses him.
Yeah.
But I do like, we were talking about how he is, he's not perfect. He does go to stop shrapnel and loses the arrow, and he thinks he shoots him in the eye. He doesn't realize he's done
Yeah, he thought
wrong.
he was like, oh no, yeah, and it turned out it didn't bother him at all. But yeah, he was worried. He was like, oh no, he turned. I killed him or something, but or maimed him. But yeah, so anyway, Nuklon and Shrapnel are fighting. They bang into a gas station, so there's gasoline everywhere, and Arrow basically tells him, don't move or I'm gonna shoot an arrow and it'll light up the gasoline. Nuklon stops because he doesn't want anyone to get hurt. And Shrapnel keeps moving. So I don't know why he did it, but you know, he fires, he made things a thousand times worse. He
Kinds of
fires
worse.
an arrow, blows up the whole gas
I
station.
think it's Ollie, and he knows. He says in his inner monologue, if I do this, I'll have to leave Seattle. And I think he's looking for any
Yeah.
reason to leave Seattle and leave and not have Dinah around. So
I
it's
guess.
Ollie. So, of course, he has to go with the biggest
Yeah.
display.
Yeah.
He can't just turn around and leave. He has to blow up a gas station. God forbid, the property damage and the people who are nearby.
I was gonna say, you know who probably wish he had gone a different route with that? The guy who owns the gas station probably would have
Exactly.
helped you went a different way. But anyway, yeah, so you're right. He does say that. So anyway, so that blows up. He thinks he's taking care of anybody. The woman that apparently Nuklon and Shrapnel were fighting over comes up and kisses Green Arrow, and that's when you see Dinah in the again, God, that haircut is just awful.
Early
in
90s, Brad.
the
It
crowd and just
was, you
walks
had to be there.
yeah walks away, and Arrow sees her walking away. Anyway, so
I like how
yeah.
he feels like he has to lecture Nuklon and Shrapnel
Right, right, right,
about
right.
things. Like he
About
has all
calming
the
down,
that
yeah.
he has all the other, but I do appreciate that he lectures them and then he's roundly rebuked by all
Yes.
parties
Yes, he
right
is.
after the lecture.
Yes, he is. He is roundly rebuked after he tries to talk some sense into them. They're like, you know, what are you talking about? You're a mess and everything. And the girl's like, hey, I just thought you were cute. I wasn't trying to, you know, do anything. And the cops come and take Nuklon away. Shrapnel just, I guess,
I guess
sort
he
of just takes off.
disperses.
Yeah,
Yeah,
he
I think
disperses and
I
takes
had
off.
to
Yeah.
look him up. As I said, I didn't know if he was a character created just for this issue or if he was had been around in the DC universe. So I believe on Wikipedia it says that all of the little pieces of his body are alive, and he can just basically implode himself and
Yeah.
disappear. So
To
that's what he
reform
does.
elsewhere.
Yeah,
Yeah.
much of everything in this issue, he's just gone. It's not explained.
Yeah,
He just
exactly.
disappears.
Exactly. And then the Seattle Commissioner Gordon comes and gives Ollie an earful, and then Ollie
He
says, "Don't
was
worry about
in
it, I'm leaving."
the comic series, Lieutenant Cameron.
He was?
That was,
Okay.
yeah, he did work with him throughout the Grell run. But yeah, he is basically Seattle Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. So, and then Ollie walks away, and he's like, and then how dare him? He says, maybe I'll go to San Francisco because at least they have the 49ers. How dare you, Ollie?
I did think of that rereading this last night. I will say, how dare him with that? And he does say, as he's thinking during the shrapnel Nuklon fight, he's thinking about, oh, well, if I do this, I'll have to leave Seattle. And he says, I'd have to look at it, but he says St. Louis, Detroit, Philly are all smaller than Seattle.
Yes,
Listen,
he does say that.
Philadelphia is not smaller than
No, it's not. It's
Seattle. Not
not
like
smaller. Yeah.
Ollie.
Yeah.
Ollie, you don't know what you're talking about there, pal.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. He didn't know what he was talking about there. But anyway, so he's look, San Francisco is a lovely city, but don't talk about the 49ers.
We did say Oliver, listen, he's talking out of his ass most
Yeah,
of
he is. He
the
is. That's true. He is. So, and he walks away, and that's the issue. So, this all leads me to say, why did you want to cover this issue?
Well, I was looking for something unique, and I wanted to pick Green Arrow, but I thought, okay, everybody can pick the Grell run, and everybody can pick the Kevin Smith
Kevin
run.
Smith run, yeah.
Those are the two, other than O'Neill and Adams, those are probably the two most
Right.
famous Green Arrow runs. And with this one, it was just, I think it was a very unique time, not only for comics, but as I said, for me too. I did at the time, I was buying up back issues and I said, okay, I'm going to subscribe to Green Arrow. And in 93, going into 94, this hits. And at the time, I thought, okay, cool. Well, I do like all of this Grell stuff, but now they're bringing Green Arrow back into the DC universe. Let's see how this is going to work out. And when we talked about this, I actually went on to Amazon and bought the whole run of Crossroads that goes on after this because I had them before I sold my comic collection, and I hadn't read them in a long time. And I wanted to see, okay, how did they integrate him? Because it was interesting to me that at that time, Green Arrow, the character, to take such a character that was known as a superhero, even though it's a guy with a bow and arrow, much like Hawkeye. I mean, basically like Hawkeye from Marvel. But he was known as a superhero. He'd been in cartoons, he had action figures, but they said, let's take him and we're going to put him in his own corner of the DC universe, and he's going to have adventures. And other than every annual that they had, he would team up with the Question and with Batman. I think Denny O'Neil wrote most of those annuals, and those were the only times. And you can team them up with the Question of Batman because, okay, we
Yeah,
can
and
put
still
them
keep it
down
street level.
and still keep it street level. But I thought it was interesting that one, they did that they gave Grell Green Arrow, and it was most likely before Kevin Smith, the most successful run that he had in comics, because famously
Oh, sure.
he's been pretty much continuously in print, but he was always before that Grell run in backups, in various. I mean, Detective Comics and
World's
Brave New World,
Finest,
World's
Detective Comics,
Finest.
stuff like that. Yeah.
Now he's
Yeah.
had miniseries. I also bought the Mike W. Barr, Trevor Von Eden miniseries from the early 80s, also just to reread, which is really good. That's firmly in the DC universe. But I just thought it was interesting because just to see how they were trying to bring him in, and I think it could be done better. And I had questions about it. One, because I always remember that cover. I'm not that that is, like I said, that cover has stayed with me. I just love that cover. And I knew that that was okay, this was the turning point for him to be integrated back into the DC universe. And I wanted to reread it and see, well, were they successful? I mean, I with this issue, I have questions. I just don't, I don't know if Kevin Dooley is playing up to what we know about Green Arrow and putting it to the 20th level and saying, okay, this is what Green Arrow is, if he's having fun with it. But it's also, for me, it was like a turning point in my comic fandom where I got into comics. The early 80s, I would buy comics, I would go to 7-Eleven and just buy whatever was on the was at 7-Eleven. And it was usually Spider-Man. That's what you would find. I mean, I found Spider-Man Wolverine at a 7-Eleven, which I can't believe, but it was always just Web of Spider-Man that I would buy because, hey, I like Spider. And as I got older and learned, oh, there's comic book stores. I can go to comic book stores and buy comics and said, okay, now I'm going to collect comics. And I talk about this, I feel like, on every podcast, but going to the mall and buying The Dark Knight Returns and Batman Year One. I was right into, I was a DC kid as a kid.
Okay.
And I, that after the Crisis is my time for comics, like from 88, 89, especially with Batman 89, into the early to mid 90s was my time for comics. This was like a turning point because it was starting, Zero Hour would start very, very soon after this comic, because this run, this Crossroads run,
yeah, it sort of leads up to him killing,
leads into Connor Hawk and Zero Hour. And it was just, it was a turning point for me, because I, you know, you had to decide, okay, I'm into this, the grim and gritty Green Arrow. And we, when we were talking about doing the show, I had at first said, oh, maybe we can do Hellblazer, because that was also when I was getting into Hellblazer and John Constantine. And, you know, I was in my late teens, early 20s, where you're saying, okay, well, I'm not going to read these, the kiddie comics anymore. I'm going to read, I'm more into like the serious stuff. And I was very much into Vertigo and Swamp Thing and all of that. But, you know, you're always going to come back to it, because I, even though soon after when the subscription ran out for Green Arrow, I probably let it go. And I the book got canceled. And famously, that's what, I mean, Kevin Smith brought him back to prominence. I didn't, like I said, I didn't want to do, I think anybody, if they were doing Green Arrow, would say, let's do something with Kevin Smith, or let's do something with Mike Rowe. I wanted to, I needed to do something that was off the beaten path. And I thought this one would be interesting.
Well, you found that beaten path. That's for sure. It was off the beaten path. Absolutely. Yeah. This was interesting. So do you have him in general? I mean, did you like him more as sort of a solo street level guy, or did you like him more with the Justice League? Did you like him kind of fighting supervillains and team ups and stuff like that? Or did you like him kind of in his own little corner of the country, kind of doing his own thing?
For me, I think one of the good things about Green Arrow is it's however you're feeling, because I have I also had the collection of Hard Traveling Heroes, and I think that's great. And, you know, it's very of its time. It's very, very of its time.
Absolutely.
But if you read it with that in mind, you still see the achievement that it was. And that's just, I mean, just the whole redesign of Green Arrow, because you see, and I'm not, I was never, I have hardly read any of his really early adventures. And that design, I mean, he was basically a Batman knockoff. To begin with, I mean, he had
more
an
or less
arrow
in the
car.
Beginning,
Speedy was Robin. I see him. I mean, if you want to honestly know, I think the best representation of him is in the Justice League Unlimited cartoon.
Oh,
and it
just
shows how
yeah
he works, because he is basically the conscience of the superheroes, and I think that's how he works best. And I think I like him the most with the JLA in the Satellite Years. Because of all the personalities clashing. But I'm not going to lie and say there aren't times where I will, as I said, I'll pick up the Longbow Hunters, or I'll just read the run of comics that I have, the Grell comics, if I'm in that mood. But I think that's what's great, sneakily great, about Green Arrow, is he works in all of these different, he can work as a superhero because of that Everman. I mean, you said he's the John McClane of superheroes. I think that's a really good description of him, because he's the Everman, but he works because and I think that's why people can relate to him, is that, you know, he, as you said, he's going to get beat up, he's not always going to win, he's not always the smartest, he's not the world's greatest detective, he's not, he doesn't have super strength, he's just a really, really, really good archer, but you can have fun adventures with that. I like to read that. He works as an urban hunter, which is what Mike Grell had him as. And I still can see him standing next to all of these other superheroes, because I think the strength of his personality, if he's written correctly, makes him work. And he can stand toe-to-toe with all of these guys.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's the truth, the power part of his personality. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you hit on a good point. He does. He is malleable. He does work in pretty much any situation, and he's a great POV character too for people, because he's not powerful, and he always worked well as that POV character in the Justice League, because he didn't have, again, like you said, he never really had his own ongoing series at that point. He was always in backups and stuff. Now he's pretty consistently, I was going to say, I pretty much have every Green Arrow issue of every series since the Kevin Smith. series and moving upwards, and there's been a few of them now. So he's had different incarnations, he's had variations of his costume. While the Neil Adams costume was sort of groundbreaking at the time and very different, very cool, I don't think it works as well. Like, the hat doesn't work as well now. I like it better with the hood. The hood is better now.
The jaunty hat would not scare you if you were a
Yeah,
mother.
no, I don't think so.
And we haven't even brought up, I mean, we haven't even brought up, as I said, that boxing glove arrows and
Yes,
all that kind
his
of stuff.
silly
I
arrows,
mean, that
absolutely.
is, but that was,
It was fun. It
you
was
have to be
fun,
in the mood
yeah.
for it, but it's
Yeah.
fun. I mean, it's
Yeah,
fun.
absolutely.
I like it, as I said, I like him as the Urban Hunter, and Mike Grell built that up. And I think that Mike Grell is, he brought a lot of his own interests and beliefs into that series. I mean, how can you not be excited by a good boxing glove arrow to the
Yeah,
face? Or,
absolutely. Or like the boomerang arrow, or the
yes!
one that had like the handcuff arrow, or the
Yes!
different stuff
Oh,
like that.
great!
My favorite was the one that always had like the rubber end, and he'd like do like trick shots with it, like bounce it off like three things and then hit like a button on a computer that would release, I don't know, release an airlock or something like that. Stupid. But that, yeah, that's always
You know,
fun.
you brought up that he's, since Kevin Smith, he's been continuously more or less in print.
Pretty
It's
much, yeah.
also because of the TV show, and I will
Yes.
say, I think
That's what I was going to bring up next, actually.
yeah,
Yeah, the TV show.
I think I watched the pilot, and as I said, and famously, Green Arrow was created as basically a Batman clone. I always viewed that TV show as, well, we can't put Batman on TV, so we can use Arrow. I did not watch it religiously. I'd pop in and out. What I think they got wrong, I mean, I was happy to see that they brought in a wider WV verse of superheroes eventually. But what I think they didn't get is, I think Ollie is not a Grimm character. I think Ollie needs to, I don't think
Yeah.
his personality is Batman's personality.
It's
Ollie,
not, no.
for as
No.
pigheaded and wrong as he can be, he has, famously in the Justice League with the chili and all of that kind of stuff. I
Yeah.
mean, Ollie can be a fun character too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he'll make jokes, and he'll be a smart ass and everything. Yeah. No, I liked the Arrow show, especially the first few seasons. I think it went on for like 9 seasons or something like that. And towards the end, it was, like a lot of those, the same with The Flash and Supergirl. All of a sudden, everybody is a superhero. Everybody's got powers, because they just run out of things to do, so it just gets, but the first few seasons, you're 100%. It's basically Batman Begins television show, the start Arrow, but it was good. Now, you're right. It was a different Oliver Queen. He had a different mindset, so to speak. He still had qualities of Oliver Queen, but he was definitely, there was a lot of Batman in him. But the show itself, I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the first few seasons, and I liked Stephen Amell as the character. I thought he did a really nice job. I thought they did overall the Grant Gustin when they brought him as a Flash, and oh my God, who a Supergirl? I'm drawing a blank on the actress's name.
I can't think of her name, but I mean, I can see her face, but I can't
I
think of her
can't think of
name,
her
and
name.
I think
It'll
she
come
was
to
great.
me. But anyway, I thought they did great casting for all three of them. I mean, they're all likable actors. They worked well together. It was basically the Trinity because they couldn't do the
Sure,
Trinity.
because they couldn't do the Trinity, yep.
Yeah, they couldn't do Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, so they did,
And
Supergirl.
believe me,
But
as I
yeah.
say these things, as somebody who grew up with the 90s Flash TV show, who longed to
Yeah.
see these characters
Yeah.
in movies and TV
Yeah,
shows
yeah, yeah.
now, and I will admit that I say to my son, like, you don't know. I think I showed him a picture of Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher and said, this
Yes.
is the Punisher that
This
we
is what
want.
we had.
This is what we had. I told him, I said, he only had a skull on his knife. He didn't wear an outfit. And he was like, why? What are you, why? I'm like, yes.
No,
So
and he was in
I
the
showed
sewer
him,
the whole time for some
yes.
reason. We don't know what he
Lou
was doing.
Gossett Jr. was his
Yeah,
sidekick. I don't know. But yeah, I shouldn't
that's
complain
right.
about that we're getting all of these TV shows. But as a comic book nerd, a part of me, as much as I just made fun of his jaunty hat, I would love to see, I would love to see that version of Green Arrow on
Oh, in
screen or on the
live
TV
action? Oh my
screen. I'm not,
goodness.
it would be interesting.
It would be
But
interesting. It would be interesting to see
yeah,
how they put that up.
Stephen Amell, he did seem like he had a respect for the character.
He did, and he really embraced it. He really embraced the character, and he never, you know, I think they did a good job with these people because they know Melissa Benoit or Benoit or something like that. That was her name. Yes, that was her name.
Yes.
Supergirl thing. You know, they respected the character, and they never seemed embarrassed by it or anything like that. You know, how some actors got like, these silly tights or whatever. They seem to really like doing it, which is cool. And the thing that was just sort of fun was being a Green Arrow fan. It was like, oh my God, they built an entire universe called the Arrowverse.
Yes,
you know, they, it's based on Green Arrow. Like, who would have ever thought that, you know, in a million years? So that was cool. And he had, well, before that, he was on Smallville by the...
I will say the Smallville version thought was pretty cool. I did I thought that was closer to in attitude. I'm not even talking about the costume, yes, but in attitude and character was
Justin Hartley.
Yes, he was very, very close to what I imagined Ollie's personality would be like. And I think on Smallville, it's because they couldn't use Batman,
right?
So again, you can't use Batman. We can bring Green Arrow in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's always the Batman substitute. but he worked. Yeah, he worked well in that. And you know, it's funny because when they all of a sudden they were gonna, you know, after Smallville was off the air and they were gonna make an Arrow TV show, I was like, oh, they bring in Justin Hartley, and there was like, oh, they're using this new guy. I was like, why are they doing that? But then I really, you know, like I said, I really took to Stephen Amell. I liked him on Smallville as well. I mean, you know, for a fringe character for a lot of years, or a guy who couldn't get his own, you know, book, all of a sudden in the 2000s, he's, you know, he's all over the place. So good for him. Yeah, absolutely. Now that what Hartley did that, what he did that, like, I don't know, the crying show on NBC that like every episode, everybody's always crying.
What
was
that? Yeah,
well, no, Tracker. That's now Tracker. He was on some sad, it was like a sad show.
Yeah,
it was always sad. I don't know.
My wife used to watch it. Yes, I know.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, I forget what it was called. One of Us or All of Us or Something of Us.
This is us.
This is us. That's what it was called. This is us.
And you know, that was with Milo Ventimiglia.
I always thought he would have been
a good Nightwing.
Yeah, he had that. He had that look. Instead, he got yelled at by Rocky as his dad in Rocky Seven or whatever, whatever that one was. But he would have made a good Nightwing. He would have. Yeah. Yeah. So I never watched the show. I think my wife watched it a little bit.
I think I have an old Facebook post that says this is true love. I am sitting here with my wife watching This Is Us. God help me. But she wouldn't sit with me and watch The Flash or like Green Arrow.
Of course not. No, it's never the other way around. It's never the other way around. So. So you know, he's had a great presence. The last few years he's been, I feel like his, now he's like one of those guys, you know, it's like when you have a spot in the city where the restaurants keep going up and they last like a year, then they fail and they keep trying, and after a while you're like, this place is cursed. I feel like that's what he is with his solo books now. Like they just don't last anymore for whatever reason. But they've had some good ones, the bad ones. The new 52 one was not particularly good. They made him clean shave, and they kind of made him look like
they were from the Arrow show.
Although I kind of liked his costume in that one, but I didn't like that he was clean shaven and everything. But they also made him a lot younger. They wanted him to be younger, you know, because there's a new 52 and all that crap. They just wrapped up with issue maybe 30 or something like that, that just finished up, which was a little darker, and he wore a different costume. And it was more practical because it actually, instead of wearing a mask, he had like a scarf type thing that covered like his nose and his mouth.
Yep.
So you couldn't see the goatee and everything. And it's like, okay, that actually makes sense. you know, that you can actually keep a secret identity that way. And one of the main storylines was, this town was poisoned. This corporation poisoned all the water in this town, and then the townspeople were coming. Formed this sort of you know, they weren't like the League of Assassins, but they were, they all wore these masks and they were going around forcing the CEOs to drink the water that they had poisoned. So it was kind of cool. They were killing them that way. And I'm
that's
like,
the other thing.
I'm like, I don't know, really know if I want Arrow to stop these guys, you know?
He's always used to whatever social commentary they want to bring into the comics.
Absolutely.
You're
going to
use Green Arrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, I went and bought like the Crossroads, the issues that came after this, and every issue but it's so heavy handed that they, you know, he's fighting pollution. He's fighting corporate fat cats. And I feel like they've always got to bring that in there. With our and some of it's really good. Some of
even today a lot of writers are doing that, and they get, you know, there's definitely a lack of subtlety in the storytelling sometimes. It's like, okay, yeah, we agree with this, but you know, maybe tell a better story around it instead of just slamming. So we know the pollution's bad, you know, but just work a good story around it. You know,
I mean, the good thing is they've aged up Speedy. So much like everybody talks about, you have to keep on seeing the Waynes dying. You don't get to keep on seeing Speedy injecting himself
doing heroin. That's true.
But it's always in the background somehow.
It always is. And in this last series, they actually refer to it a little bit. He doesn't start using again, but he's helping some people who were users and stuff like that.
But
so,
I mean, even with that, and I'm joking, but in that, I mean, that's one of the most famous comic book issues ever in the history of comics. If you read that storyline, Ollie's kind of a dick.
He is 100%. Yeah, he's terrible.
Really to him. It's Dinah who helps him get through it. But that's what I've always, when I say like, but that's what I've liked about Green Arrow is he is more realistic than most characters. He's not going to be the one who says, yes, I will help you now, and we're going to sit and I'll help you through this. He doesn't know how to react to it either. And as I said, it's Dinah who's the one who helps Roy through it. So
reacted like a 70s dad, basically, when he saw that,
he,
you know, which isn't necessarily a good thing in that case. But he did not react well to it. It's funny, I actually just read that the other night, because I was, you know, after reading this, I was like, I should go back and read some of the old Green Arrow. So I was reading a lot of the Hard Traveling Heroes stuff, and I actually just read that issue the other night.
I like the Hard Traveling Heroes. It is very Denny O'Neill, man. I love Denny O'Neill. It is very, very right down to the Bob Dylan quotes and everything that start them off. It is very early 70s.
Yes,
and
it's very
I mean, again, it was something that people had never seen in comics then, but it's very, very on the nose when you have a guy crucified on a plane's propellers.
Yes.
It's like, okay, we get what you're going for, Denny. We get it. But I mean, I'm not diminishing, and the artwork is, I mean,
oh yeah, you know, Neil Adams is terrific. It's amazing in that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I guess they kind of consider that the start of the Bronze Age, don't they? Isn't that
it's around there. That and Gwen Stacy dying.
No, that's right. That's right.
I mean, it's all right around there with that year. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, is there anything else you wanted to say about Arrow? I mean, I could talk Green Arrow, you know, all day, all night. I you know, he's definitely and has been for a long time on my Mount Rushmore. I named my older son is named Oliver.
Nice. I didn't know that.
So
I'm not saying it just because your son is named that. I've always thought Oliver was a cool name, like Ollie as a nickname.
That's what we call him. We call him Ollie.
I like that also. But no, I mean, with picking this issue, I did know, I was like, okay, this is not some groundbreaking issue, but I wanted to use it as one because I thought it was funny, because it's not the greatest issue. So encapsulate Ollie, as you said, he's going through this, he's trying to fight off two people, and all he is doing in his inner monologue is whining to himself.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
This is Oliver Queen. It's the dichotomy of Oliver Queen. It's the guy who wants to do the right thing, but can't help but trip over himself as he's trying to do the right thing. As we've just discussed, I mean, for a character who has been around for for 70 something years now, I was going to say, I mean, it's almost 100 years in some time, and is finally kind of getting his due now. And unfortunately, this is the perils. And I love Marvel and DC. When I say as a DC fan, I love both. But as somebody who wants to see the DC heroes done right. If they are going to go forward with this DCU in the movies, now that the comic book movie craze is kind of winding down, I don't know if we'll ever get to see a big screen Green Arrow. But I will say this, with not that James Gunn will be writing or directing it, but if it's James Gunn who's overseeing it, I could see Ollie being done in the way that I think, and I don't mean that, you know, in the way that I think he should be done, but in the way that is close to his personality in the comics, where he would have a little bit of humor and that sarcastic kind of personality that can take the edge off.
Yeah, I think a guy like Green Arrow would be right up Gunn's alley. I think he could really do well.
Glove arrows and all
No, I think he'd lean into all that. Yeah. You know, that's funny. I didn't really think about it because I'm just so used to him being on television as opposed to in movies. But that would be a terrific thing. I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but there was supposed to be a Green Arrow movie, I think in the 2000s. It was going to be called Green Arrow Supermax. It was supposed to be like him escaping from a Supermax. Did you ever hear about this?
I did hear about that, yeah. Oh, wow. That makes me think about Ain't It Cool News and reading that kind of stuff on Cool News back then. Yeah. Yes, I did hear about this.
So there's a a podcast. These two Australian guys who go over movies that
never made,
but or either got really close to being made. You know, like in What Happened, and they covered this one. And I forget who they thought was going to play him.
Been thrown out there, like Matthew McConaughey back in the early 2000s. They would
say. Oh, really? Maybe.
But I do remember. I don't remember who they said would be in it, but I do remember that people reviewing the script and saying that he would be thrown into the Supermax prison. He would kind of like they would do with like the bald head look that sometimes Ollie always, if he goes back to the
shaves his head sometimes,
and they would shave off the goatee, but it would be him in there, and it would be a bunch of different supervillains, and he would have to escape. And I mean, this was before the MCU, it was before the DC movies. It would have been cool. I don't know how it would have turned out. It was before, you know, I'm saying it's before the big time superhero explosion that we saw in the 2010s. But it would have been a cool movie. It would have been a very cool movie.
It would have been interesting. Yeah, Canceled Movie Report is the podcast I was thinking about. But it would have been interesting to see. I always wish that some of these movies at least like just do an animated version of it. So it's low cost. You don't have to do that much. You know, just take the scripts and have fun with it. But anyway, maybe one day we'll see. You'd think we would eventually see Green Arrow on the big screen.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
Seen Hawkeye. Why wouldn't we see Green
Arrow?
Well,
I was going to say, in the MCU, I like the way that they did Hawkeye, and Jeremy Renner would have been a good Green Arrow. I like the way he played. I mean, I'm not the biggest Hawkeye guy from the comics, and his personality is a little bit different than the Hawkeye in the comics. I could have seen Renner playing Green Arrow the way he plays Hawkeye, because he says it in the second Avengers movie where he says, I'm just a guy with bow and arrow, and as everything's going around, and he brings it up and calls it out.
Yeah.
He says it like, I'm just here with a bow and arrow and I'm surviving. So go and survive. So he, you know, I like how he calls that out.
If you watch the, you know, he had the series on Disney Plus. It lasted like 6 or 8 episodes. I forget that they finally kind of let Hawkeye's personality come out. A little bit. But that was closer to like what a Green Arrow would be. Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know any actors anymore.
I was thinking of it beforehand. I was trying to think, okay, who would I say on the show? I just saw The Odyssey this past weekend. So I mean, Matt Damon looked good with a beard and a bow and arrow that he was running around. But I can't see Matt Damon as Green Arrow. Okay. I don't know. McConaughey, maybe years ago, I could see he could play
I think a few years ago he could have done that. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know enough actors. Just I certainly don't know their names.
Check out the, they were releasing about 10, 15 years ago when they were releasing the DC animated movies, they were doing the DC shorts before them, and they did a Green Arrow DC short.
Oh, did they?
And it was very cool. Yeah. It's only like 5 to 10 minutes long. The animation was great. They did one for him. They did one for the Spectre, I believe, one for the Phantom Stranger.
Oh,
They were on
interesting.
like they were on the DVD. I don't know if HBO Max has them. They were on the DVDs if you would buy them. But yeah,
Oh,
the Green
okay.
Arrow one, it's like 10 minutes long. And I can't remember exactly what, but I just remember the animation was really cool. And it was good. I mean, like I said, the Justice League Unlimited, I think it was Kit Schwenger, who I remember from being on General Hospital, because my mom used to watch General Hospital.
Okay.
He did the voice, but I thought he was great. Like
No, he was
I
terrific. He was,
yeah,
I,
I thought
you're,
he was
that's a good,
great.
yeah, that's a good point. The Green Arrow on Justice League Unlimited was really good. That was
Yeah.
a, that was a good call. 'Cause I wasn't, I didn't really watch that stuff when it was on. You know, Chris Franklin and his wife Cindy on
Yeah.
our network, they did a whole show about it. And it wasn't basically until then I was like, oh, maybe I'll watch it. It's all, it was all on HBO. So I just started watching it like kind of along with the show. And yeah, Green Arrow is a big standout
Yeah, I
in
agree
that
with
series. Yeah.
Cindy, and not because I'm just afraid that she would hit me really hard, but yeah, it is the greatest representation of the DC universe in that
Yeah.
cartoon. Just all the characters were spot on, and you can do Green Arrow and put him in that outfit, and he doesn't look too weird in animation.
No,
So
absolutely. Yeah, he can yeah, he can pull it off in animation. You're 100% right. Yes, he can. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, good. I really I was very excited about doing Green Arrow because he, like I said, he's one of my all-time favorites, you know, and I wanted to do him justice. And when I read this story, I almost canceled. But I was like, oh my God. But no, this was it was really fun covering him. And I'm trying, I feel like there's a million other things I could say about him, but I don't want
Yeah.
this podcast to go on for 4 hours. All right. Well, listen, Mike, it's last call. So in this segment, I asked my insightful guest Mike some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepared for the show. I asked the questions. Mike fascinates us all with his answers. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm gonna be try to be fascinating. Yeah,
Okay.
I'm
All right. As always, I always give my guest the first two questions in advance, and then the last one is a mystery fantastic question. So, fantastic question number one, Oliver Queen has to put together his own league to do some gray area missions. No other archers allowed. Who's on this seven-member team?
All right, well, first I picked Nightwing because you don't want to bring in Batman. Because I don't think Ollie would want Batman overshadowing him. But you need a guy, if you're not going to have Batman, you need to have someone who's trained by Batman. And Dick, obviously, is
Yeah.
a lot more amiable than Batman is. But he also has detective skills that Batman has. He has the fighting skills that Batman has. So, you know what? If you don't feel like dealing with the Batman drama, you go get Nightwing. As the second member, I picked Zatanna, and it's not because she has magical powers. It's because Ollie has a thing for women with
Fishnets.
fishnets. So you gotta have Zatanna on the team.
Is this going to be a problem? Are we going to have to call HR on
Well, I
with
mean, if
this
there's
team? I
just
mean,
like
this
gripe
is.
questions, I think he's telling Dinah, like, you know what, these have to be on the down low. So I don't want to get your hands dirty. So you stay here, run the flower shop. And I'll take care of this stuff. And I mean, it's Ollie again. Of course, he's gonna
Yeah,
have. He
of
can't
course.
help himself.
But then he's
Can't
like, oh,
help
by the
himself.
way, I'm having Zatanna
Yes.
on
Now, if
the
she
team.
shows up in her 70s outfit, I don't know if he's saying like, well, I mean, could you put the top hat and the
Yeah.
pigtails on? Or
He's like, what's this?
what are
What's
you?
with
What are we even
bug
doing?
head? What's
Yeah,
with that
I got a bug head.
thing?
It's a third member. He's got to have Hawkman because we have to have the buddy cop. You have to have the buddy cop
Yeah.
dynamic, and you have to have these two arguing as bullets are flying by them, as laser beams are flying by them, as
Absolutely.
they're beating up bad guys. They have to be arguing about something, and then you know that's going to be the comic relief. Purely just for fighting skills, I would bring in Katana from The Outsiders.
Oh, nice.
Just because it's an underused character, I think. You don't really see, other than the Suicide Squad movie, and I'm not talking about the no personality Suicide Squad version of Katana. I'm talking about the
No.
honorable 1980s version of Katana.
Yeah. Underused character. That's a good pull. He, sorry to interrupt. Green Arrow was actually part of the Outsiders for a little while. I think in the
Was
second
he?
incarnation of the series, they did a like a second like Batman the Outsiders, and it became like Nightwing and the Outsiders. And for a while, like Green Arrow was on the team and like running the team for a while. It was really weird. They kept like kind of switching off from Batman to Nightwing to Green Arrow to some of them to off. But yeah, he was so I can't remember who was on the team when he was on it, but I'm sure Katana was on the team. She always seemed to be on the team.
Can you imagine being in the Outsiders and you don't know who you're going to deal with? You're like, all right, well, Green Arrow will let us get away with stuff. I gotta like eat his chili and hear about like political diatribes. And you have
Yeah,
Nightmare,
exactly.
it's like, all right, Nightwing's chill. And then it's like, oh no, Batman. It's like when the district manager is coming to visit. It's like, oh, Batman's coming. Everybody put on the safety vest and make sure that we have all the paperwork done right because he's going to come in. I didn't know about that. I didn't know that he was in a version of the Outsiders. I had Vixen because
Oh, nice.
I think it's another underused character. And I'm going back to again Justice League Unlimited. I think they did justice to her character. I think,
Absolutely.
you know, I mean, she was in the Detroit League, but I think you don't. And again, I don't read as many comics as I used to. I feel like that's an underused character, but I think it's cool. I like the visual for Vixen, and I think she would kind of give it back to Ollie if you're going to have that dynamic. It's
Absolutely.
another one that, I mean, Ollie, if he's going to be the leader of the team, you know he's going to screw up. So you know you're going to have all of the teammates questioning his decisions, and I think Vixen would kind of give it back to
Yeah,
her.
half of them are
Instead,
going to want to quit by the first after the first
yes.
mission. So she's going to, yeah, she could be one of the ones to kind of talk some
I
sense
think
back into him here.
she has a cool power set, and I'm sure that Ollie would, you know, he would think that he's using his charms on her, and she would kind of just want nothing to do with him. So, Cassandra Cain, Batgirl. I would like to see the, and we could take from like anywhere, right? So that's why I wanted to get
No, this is great.
Cassandra Cain version of it because I think that he could kind of have a little bit of like a father-daughter kind of mentor relationship with her that I think would be cool. And again, she has the skills. You know, she's no
She would
slouch.
probably like Ollie. She would probably like
Yeah.
not like in a romantic way, but she would probably
Oh,
just like him because he's not like as much a pain in the ass as Batman. You know, he's just kind of I think they're as odd as it seems, it just seems like those two, their personalities would mesh well. Like that
yeah.
she'd like kind of get him.
Yeah, he's I think he's a little bit more willing to let her bend the rules than Batman
Yes.
would be.
100%.
I had you always need like the guy in the chair. You need the smart guy, the Atom, but the Ryan Choi version of the Atom.
All right.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. The only version of the Ray Palmer Atom I ever liked was again Justice League Unlimited because it was Dr. Cox from Scrubs was doing the voice, and I
Oh,
thought
is that who
Scrubs
did his voice in that?
best.
Oh, that's great.
Way like more personality in his couple of appearances on the cartoon than I ever got from Ray Palmer and any of the other. I'm sorry to all those Atom fans out there, but yeah. So the Ryan Choi Atom, and finally I had Vigilante, the Adrian Chase Vigilante, because you have to have that wild card. I would like to see what that relationship would be between, because in that Mike Grell series, Ollie would kill if he had to. Now, again, with Oliver Queen, he would kill, but then he would, I'm sure that he would also lecture someone who wanted to kill, kind of like Vigilante is. And it's like, Ollie, you're shooting arrows through people's hearts. I mean, come on, man. Yeah,
Yeah,
but that's not going to
exactly.
stop him from telling somebody not to do it. So I think that would
Sure.
be another interesting
That
kind of dynamic in the team.
is a fascinating. I would read that. That is a
I
fascinating
know.
group.
I was
It
excited, Andrew.
really
I
is.
was like, you know what? I'm going to fly out to California where DC is
Yeah.
bring this
Wow.
idea like
That's a
right now.
wild group. That is a wild group, man. I really like that group.
It's one of those books that you would read not so much for the actual adventures, but just the team dynamic. And that's what I was
Absolutely.
looking
Yeah, it
for,
doesn't
is
matter. It
definitely,
honestly
yeah.
wouldn't even matter if they fought anybody. It just, yeah, you just want to see them in the headquarters, so like
They could all
meshing.
just be in the Arrow Cave and just hanging out. And just I want to hear what they're I want to hear the conversations they're having.
Good
Thank
job.
you.
Good
Thank
job.
you.
All right. Question number two. If DC editorial allowed you to take any five, I've asked the same question with a couple of different guests, depending on who it was. I know I asked it for Stella when she had Batgirl. If DC editorial allowed you to take any 5 to 10 villains from anywhere in the DC universe, what rogues gallery would you give Green Arrow? Because let's face it, he doesn't have much of a rogues gallery
No, I mean,
besides
what?
like Count Vertigo.
Count
You know,
Vertigo.
that's about the only guy he's got. So who would you have?
Well, the first one I picked was Deadshot, which
Ooh.
I think that would be cool. I mean, you have the world's greatest archer versus one of the world's greatest shots. See, I don't know if they've ever fought each other. I don't know if they've ever
That's a good question. You think they
been.
would have had to, right?
Yeah, you
But
would
I
think
can't
so,
think of
right?
one.
And again, Deadshot is not, he's also kind of not a wise ass, but he's not like the most eloquent of. He's more of like a down to earth type of villain. So I think him and Ollie would be able to go at it, not mentally, but just verbally with each other. So I think it would be fun to see them and just to see the two skills put against each other. I think that would be interesting.
You ever read him in Suicide Squad and like Ostrander's Suicide Squad?
Yes.
That's terrific.
Sportsmaster.
Yes.
Just for, again, with the boxing glove arrows, with all the trick arrows. Yeah. I mean, that's basically almost like the villain version of Green Arrow in a way, with all the kind of, not, they're not tricks, but I mean, they're gimmicks. So Ollie's going to get to use his gimmicks. Sportsmaster can use his gimmicks. And I'm surprised they've never been.
You think they would have fought too, right?
Yeah. You would think so. And again, I hope I'm not missing anything within like the last 10 to 15 years, because I am not as up on the comics of the last 10 to 15 years as I was.
I've been reading a lot of Green Arrow the last 20 years. I can't think of a time they have. Maybe I'm forgetting it too. Somebody in the lounge will tell us if we're you know.
For the third one, okay, this is just for sales reasons, the Joker.
Really? Interesting.
Well, I also was thinking, again, I don't know if Green Arrow has ever gone up against the Joker. And the Joker and Batman, of course, it's that dichotomy of Batman, who is grim and super serious, and the Joker, who everything's a joke. And I'm thinking of the Joker maybe back in the 80s into the 90s. I don't mean the super serial cutting their face off Joker that we have now. Yeah. But it would be interesting to see Green Arrow, who is not that grim type of hero, go up against the Joker. Does that bother the Joker that it's not, maybe the things that he does don't affect Green Arrow the same way that they affect Batman? Right.
That's very true. That's interesting. Yeah.
Deacon Blackfire from the cult. As I said, Ollie can be malleable, where you can have him fight Deadshot or Sportsmaster. Mm-hmm. If you want to give him a villain or an adversary that is a little bit more down to earth and realistic, how about a cult leader? How about Deacon Blackfire? And that, again, Ollie can spout off his beliefs on religion and on cults and on politics while he's fighting against Deacon Blackfire. I just think that would be interesting. I know he's been brought back a couple times. But that's not—it's not a villain that's been used that much. So, I took the whole from anywhere in the DC universe. Do you consider Vertigo a part of the DC universe?
Sure, of course.
So, could Ollie fight the Saint of all killers from Preacher?
Oh wow, from Preacher! Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. Yeah, absolutely, he can.
Where they just, you know, they could just do 10 paces and turn around and fight.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a long time since I've read Preacher, but when you posed the question to me, I was racking my brain. I didn't want to think of the obvious choices, and I said, "What about the Saint of Killers?" All I could see were those old Glenn Fadry covers of the Saint of Killers.
So yeah. No, that would be awesome. Anytime you can tie Green Arrow into like a Western, I'm.
And I also had the Prankster / the Toy Man, because I always get them confused. I was kind of confused, and I feel like they're kind of the same gimmick.
Yeah, more or less.
Again, it's kind of gimmick versus gimmick. Yeah. If you're going to just have Ollie in a pure comic book type of adventure that he can go up against. And lastly, I had Manhunter, Mark Shaw, Manhunter.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, again, goes back to, you can tell a more grounded story. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a lot of those Grell stories, Oliver was working for and against the CIA. So if you're getting into the Manhunters, you can get into that whole kind of organization, and maybe they bring him in to help with special ops. And of course, things go bad. They try to kill him. He's on the run, and you know, he gets to show off. He gets to show off his skills against the Manhunter. Yeah. And that's, again, I like the aesthetics of both characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you could just have Walt Simonson illustrate that, that'd be great. Okay.
Are you familiar with the storyline Event Leviathan?
I know the title of it.
It was when Brian Michael Bendis came over to DC for a while. This was one of the things he did. It was kind of like this whole cloak and dagger thing, where like the secret organization and everything. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read this or wants to read this, but it turns out the mastermind behind it was Mark Shaw. But it was sort of like they build it up to this grand reveal, and they're like, it's Mark Shaw, and everything, you know, and these are like, people, you know, this is like in, God, I don't, what was this, like maybe 2019 or something like that, and everybody's like, what?
Who?
Yeah. So it didn't work as well as people, as maybe he He thought Ben just thought it would, but anyway, as soon as she said Mark Shaw, I was like, oh yeah, sure, Event Leviathan, yeah. So he's definitely in the Cloak and Dagger stuff. So absolutely,
And I did have
there you
fun
go.
just if he wanted to go up against Kite Man and Mirror Master, if they
Oh
teamed up
yes,
to they teamed up to fight that Green Arrow, that would be a
yeah,
fun one
yes,
shot.
it would, it would. All right. Well, very good. That's a nice rogues gallery for Ollie. I like that. All right. So, Mystery Fantastic question. We all knew this was coming. I'm going to need another beer for this. Let's talk Eagles. So, how you're from Philadelphia, born and
I am
raised, yeah?
born and raised in Philadelphia. I don't live in Philadelphia anymore. I live half hour outside of Philadelphia, but born
Gotcha.
and raised in my beloved Southwest Philadelphia. I grew up every Sunday. My grandmother and aunt and cousins lived 2 doors away from my row. We all lived in row homes. They lived 2 doors away. We'd go over every Sunday, we'd have spaghetti and meatballs, and we would watch the Eagles and usually listen to my dad and uncle and grandfather curse out the television because it was the 80s and early 90s.
So I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and my family's had season tickets for the Eagles since I was about 12 years old. So
That's
I grew
amazing.
up going to the vet and
Yes.
saw some things I can't talk about on this podcast,
Are you
but
talking about on the field or just in the
no,
bathrooms when they had the
in
trowel
the
in?
trial, yes. Veterans Stadium was the Eagles stadium for a long time until mid
Late.
90s. No, late
No,
90s.
until the early
2000,
2000s. I think it
2000.
was two.
It was
No,
night.
because remember the last game of the vet was when the Buccaneers beat the
Yes.
Eagles in the NFC
Yes. Yeah.
Championship game.
I was there.
Oh, I'm
I so
sorry.
here just about that. The last game at Veterans Stadium was the NFC Championship game. So whoever wins this goes to the Super Bowl. And the Eagles are playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that city was electric. Everybody was so fired up. I went to the game. The Eagles started great. They went right down the field and scored. The place was going nuts. Everybody's like, "We're gonna kill them." Yes. And then they just laid an egg the rest of the game. And it culminated with the Eagles are going down. They're down by like 10 points right now. They're going down to score a touchdown. Donovan McNabb throws an interception to Rondae Barber, who runs it back in dead silence. And I kid you not, I was in that stadium. We are in the 700 level, and I could hear the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cheering on the sideline. That's that. There was about maybe four Buccaneers fans in that entire stadium. Place was dead silent. And he ran it back. The game was over. And I turned to my friend and I looked at him and I said, "We are never, ever, ever winning anything." And I stormed out of that stadium. I was so to this day, I hate the Buccaneers so bad because I will never get over that. I'll never get over that game. I was sorry, this is all bad stuff.
Well,
But
I yeah,
anyway.
I was gonna say I was gonna cry my beer, but like I've gotten two Super Bowls out of it. I tell my son, as we were at the first Super Bowl parade in freezing cold weather,
Oh, did you go? Oh my
I went to
God.
the one and he was crying. I went with my son and my daughter. My son was 7 and my daughter was about 3,
Oh my
and they
God,
were
why did
crying.
you bring me?
They were crying because it was so cold, and I said to my son, "You may never see this again." I waited 47 years of my life to see this. We're watching this parade.
That's right. You lose a couple of fingers, so what?
Yeah, when he's in therapy one day. Now, I will say they won 1.5 years ago, and he's a big Eagles fan, and even my daughter, I mean, she's not a super fan, but she knows that daddy likes it, so she watches. And to get to watch not only the playoffs, but the Super Bowl, and for them to realize that they won, and to get to hug him and celebrate with him and my daughter and my wife and our friends who were there, and my dad. It was amazing.
So we're basically the same age. So we've kind of like lived through all these,
Oh,
you know. Well, here's just a way to describe Philadelphia sports. In 1980, the Philadelphia sports teams all made their championship game. The Phillies made the World Series, the Flyers made the Stanley Cup Finals, the Sixers made the NBA championship game, and the Eagles made the Super Bowl, all within the same calendar year. And the only team that won was the Phillies. We almost went 0 for 4 in championship games. The only
that
team that
is
won was
Philadelphia
the
in a
Phillies.
nutshell.
And that's Philadelphia in a nutshell. And so they'd always be good, and then they'd lose. In the 2000s, the beginning of the 2000s, the Eagles made the NFC championship game 4 years in a row. The first year they lost to the Rams. Second year they lost to the Buccaneers. I was there. third year, they lost to the Carolina Panthers. For
Jake
God's
DeLome.
sake, Jake DeLome. I was there. Finally, the fourth year in a row, they make it to the NFC Championship game in 2004. They're playing the Atlanta Falcons. I told my family, I'm not going. I can't go again. I can't do it. Of course, they won that one. They went to the Super Bowl, and they lose to the Tom Brady New England Patriots. Then they make it one more year, like about like three years later.
3 years later, yeah.
They make the NFC Championship again, and they're playing the Arizona Cardinals of all crap teams, and they lose to them.
After they came back and took
they
the
came
lead
back, took the lead, and then lost again because Andy Reid just.
People don't realize as Philadelphia fans, we remember even after winning two championships, we remember all this. I remember where I was, and this is usually in basements where I'm watching these games.
Andy Reid was the coach from like 1999 until what, 2015,
I believe.
2015.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He was there for like 14 years or so. Maybe longer, I guess maybe 15 years. He was this lauded coach. He'd always get him like right to the apex and they'd lose. Half the time, it would just be like all of a sudden Andy forgot how to coach. You know, there would be so many of those situations where like
would throw up.
Yeah, or the quarterback would throw up,
literally.
Like he did in the Super Bowl, literally threw up. They fire Andy Reid. He goes to the Kansas City Chiefs and wins three Super Bowls, including one against the Eagles, which is just burns me. But finally, like I said,
we should have won that. Jalen Hurts should have two.
We got screwed. To this day, with that defensive holding call, we got screwed. Yeah. But we'll get to that in a minute. The whole, but going back
let
to Super Bowl,
out, Brett. Let it all out.
I know I am letting it all out. Super Bowl 52. The Eagles finally make it back to the Super Bowl. They're playing the Patriots again. Tom Brady again, and we win. And
greatest, and it's not just because the Eagles were in it, it's the greatest Super Bowl ever played. I mean, just entertainment value alone.
Right before halftime, the Eagles go for it on a fourth down. Everybody thought they were going to kick a field goal. That's the Philly special we did earlier, where it was a rookie running back gets the ball, pitches it to a backup tight end who throws it to our backup quarterback, Nick Foles, who was playing the game.
This is not a movie starring Tony Danza. This was real life.
Yes, this is real life. It was amazing. And you just didn't think at this point, you're like, we're going to win this game. We're going to win this game. And then, of course, Tom Brady happens. He comes back. They take the lead. We get the lead back. The Eagles are up. They got a late fumble. Finally, they were able to stop Brady once. They got a late fumble, kicked a field goal. They're up by 8. Brady has the ball again.
Oh, my God.
And he throws a Hail Mary into the end zone. Rob Gronkowski's, the Patriots tight end, is in the end zone, and he looks like King Kong. He looks like he's 8 feet tall, just swatting down Eagles defenders, waiting for this ball to land in his hands. And you're like, oh, it felt like that play took 10 minutes, just watching that ball in the air.
Went up. We were at a friend's house actually, and she went up into their kid's bedroom and would not watch the last play because she didn't want to know what would happen until she heard us screaming, and she still didn't know if that was good screams or bad screams until she came downstairs and saw us jumping all over each other, hugging each other.
That's funny. Yeah. So the ball bounced around like 20 times, finally hit the ground. One of their other little twerp receivers almost caught it before it hit the ground. It wasn't as close when you see it on the replay. It wasn't
no,
quite
but
as
it
close
felt there. Like it was. Now, I do have the Christmas ornament of Zach Ertz diving into the end zone.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
that's awesome. A Hallmark ornament that I do have on my tree.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. But we were watching it. We're at home, and our youngest at the time was like maybe 2. So he didn't, you know, he's like, what's happening? Why are they acting like maniacs? You know, he doesn't understand. And I'm standing, the whole game, the second half, I'm just standing the entire game. And I'm watching it. And when it finally fell, I'm just like looking at the TV. I'm like, is it over? Is it over? Is it over? I'm waiting. Yeah. I'm waiting for like something to tell me it's over. You know, like, is there a flag? Is there something? And then they say it's over. And it was like, you know, it felt like 100 years of just failure just washed
just
away, and it was
over.
The greatest sports moment of my life. I just started screaming, and I, you know, and I was just, oh my God, I can't even describe.
For as much as people make fun of Philadelphia fans, you know, get a bad rap, the whole throwing the snowball to Santa Claus. You brought up the 700 level, all of that kind of stuff. And some of it's warranted. I don't think it is as much anymore. And maybe it's because we've won championships. But I remember, and I was lucky, I got to see the Phillies win in 2008. And that was great. But there's something with the Eagles in Philadelphia. It's a special type of relationship. And after that Super Bowl, you thought about my grandfather who had passed away, who was an Eagles fan. I remember my brother's birthday was soon after that. And we went out to have a party for him in the city. And just everybody was happy. And it was, it was like a week or two after the Super Bowl. And just everyone was happy. The way that it made people feel. Yeah. And I brought up, I mean, I remember some of my core memories, the happiest memories of my life are going to my aunt's and all of us watching. And I can remember the 4 o'clock games that back then we wouldn't be on 4 o'clock that much because the Eagles weren't like they are now on national TV.
Yeah, they were on prime time. If they were,
we would have the smaller black and white TV that we would bring up and put on the counter and turn it on while we were all eating Sunday dinner so we could watch the Eagles game. Like I said, I mean, with me growing up, from an early age, bought my son like Eagles and Phillies and Flyer stuff and watched football with him and to get to share it with him. That one, I mean, he was young, he knew, but he didn't really know.
Yeah.
And then to get to see it again. And as you said, I never thought, I mean, my dad was born in 1948. So he was alive when they won in 60, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't like it is now where, you know, it's this worldwide sport that, and back then too, Philadelphia had won a couple things. I don't think sports was as big as it is now. And famously, like before the Phillies, Philadelphia had a championship drought where we hadn't won a championship in over 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do tell my son and my kids, I'm like, you guys are lucky. You've seen two Eagles championships. I actually feel lucky because I got this, I've seen two Eagles championships and a Phillies championship, you know? So it's like Philadelphia, I love, I will never be embarrassed to say I'm from Philadelphia. I love to say that I'm from Philadelphia because stuff like this, I mean, you and I started talking. I mean, I would follow the network, but I remember following you and saying, oh, wait a minute, this guy likes the Eagles. All right, I can talk to him about Eagle stuff. And it's just something when you, now I go on vacation. I was just out in the Southwest a couple weeks ago, and my son will say to me, like, oh, just saw somebody with a Phillies hat. But we were hiking in Arizona, walking up after like an hour hike, I'm ready to collapse. And I passed by a guy in a Phillies hat and I said, do you know what the score is? And he's like, yeah, they were losing, but I think they're coming back right now. I was like, all right, cool, thanks.
So,
or you'll get a Go Birds.
Wherever you got Go Birds anywhere.
Like, Go Birds.
I mean, you know, all fan bases feel certain ways about their teams and everything like that. But yeah, the thing that makes Philly special is, I think, because it's such a blue collar city.
And it's a city and neighborhood. I mean, I say to you, oh, I grew up in Southwest Philadelphia. Where I grew up, it's like, you know, when I meet people from where I grew up, it's the first thing you ask is what, you know, what church did you go to? What parish were you from? You know, I mean, that's what Philadelphia is like.
Yeah, and it's not just the city. It spreads outwards. If you're in South Jersey, if you're in Delaware, if you're in the surrounding, you know, Southeast Pennsylvania. Yeah. Especially Sundays with the Eagles. I mean, it's just part of it is a religion of sorts, you know, and it's what you did. And
good or ill.
It's always sunny in Philadelphia. They did, after the Eagles won the first time, they did an episode, and there's a great speech that Danny DeVito's character does. They're in the bathroom stall and he's talking with Mac.
And know who we are? We're losers. All of Philadelphia. We're angry and we're mean and we're cruel. And we act like jerks. And now these, they can't even bring us beer so that you can pass the stone and we can win the game.
No, 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 Mac. You got them all wrong. No. Those guys are Philadelphia. They bust their ass every day just to get through. Then, on a Sunday, they put all their hopes into the Eagles. And year after year after year, their team lets them down. And they get angry, and that anger builds into a stone of fury. And if it could just be released, then we could feel something different. What? Then you, me, us, those guys, the whole city of Philadelphia could feel like champions.
And when we did win, you're right. You had this moment where you thought about your grandfather. first person I called, I went outside and I called my dad. He's the one I watched all the games with. But when I went to games, that was actually with my mom. My parents were divorced, so that was with my mom and my stepdad. So then I called her, because it was exciting to her. And then I called my sister, and then, so it just,
It's a shared experience.
yeah. And
I
it was all
want to have
family.
that
I
with
was
my
calling
son.
family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to have that with my son. I mean, I hope that one day he'll just think of me. I still talk to a cousin of mine who grew up in the area, and she's older than I am, but she grew up and she lives in Virginia now. But we still talk every Sunday on Messenger about what's going on. I lie to my wife because she says to me, you make it affect you. I'm like, it doesn't affect me like it used to years ago when it would ruin my whole week. And yeah,
Yeah.
maybe it doesn't ruin the whole week, but it'll
Yeah.
still ruin Sunday night
It
if things
ruins the
break off.
day. Yeah, it
It'll still
ruins the
ruin
day. It
the day.
ruins the
But
rest of your Sunday.
she'll
Yeah.
say there's so many much more important things. And I'm like, no, there's not. There's really,
Yeah.
there's not. There's not. There is a meme. You're talking about the Always Sunny scene. There's a meme also, or there's something online that says, I'm ready for this quarterback to decide how I'm going to feel about myself for the next 3 months in the year or something like that. And that's how
Yeah.
it is. And then now, as I was talking about our reputation as fans and stuff, and some of it's warranted, a lot of it's not, because all fan bases are insane, and it's
Yeah.
always you always pick and choose the worst parts of it. I mean, you said you had seats in the 700 level.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I mean, people feared the 700 level. I
Yeah.
remember a friend of mine who his second team was the Seahawks, and he went to, this was in the mid 90s when the Eagles weren't that good. He went to an Eagles Seahawks game 12 or 13. They booed him unmercifully with his, and I said to him, why'd you wear a Seahawks? Well, how could
Yeah,
you wear a
what do you
Seahawks?
think? What are you
What are you
thinking? Yeah,
doing?
just
And
don't
I
do it.
remember sitting up in the 700 level and just being like, oh my God, like, why are, what's up with all these people puking over the side of railings?
Yeah, yeah.
This was also, I think it's a little bit different now with fandom, but.
It's a little different too. I will say, 700 level. Yeah, there was some, again, there's some stories I
The
can tell,
stories are true, I believe, but yeah, it just adds to the
Some
legend.
of them aren't like violent or anything. They're
Yes,
just
yes.
crazy or silly or whatever. Things are a little different. One, I think they priced out a lot of these people
Oh yeah,
that were
most
causing problems.
definitely, most
Two,
definitely.
it's been a long time, so half of them are probably dead, mostly because their livers
And
exploded.
three, yes. And three, like we've had success now, so we're a little bit
Yes.
less cranky.
Yeah, we can handle it a
A
slightly
little
bit
bit.
better. We won that Super Bowl against the Patriots, and then we went through some changes, and then Jalen Hurts comes, and we don't know what to think of this guy at the time. We have Carson Wentz, and they're like, why are we drafting a quarterback in the second round? This kid from, he was in Alabama, they was in Oklahoma, and his second year as a starter, we go to the Super Bowl again, and they play the Chiefs. They're winning, and it's neck and neck, and then right at the end of the game, it's a tie game. The Chiefs get a holding call, which they hadn't called the entire game.
Now,
They
and
hadn't
also
called a defensive holding call.
I blame that.
They kick a field goal. They're basically able to eat pretty much the entire clock.
That and his godfather. What was up with it? What was up with the playing field? Our defense that was so good couldn't. Our pan, we had like one of the best pass rushes ever, and then all of a sudden.
But I just to this day, I remember Patrick Mahomes like pointing, going, holding, holding. I hate that
Yeah,
guy.
it is.
Anyway, so that, but, and this guy, Jalen Hurts, the whole story, he kept that picture of it on his phone of him standing there with all the Kansas City Chiefs confetti falling all over him. He's just bitter. He keeps on his phone. 2 years later, we go back to the Super Bowl. This was a year and a half ago now, and just pound the Chiefs. Just pound them. Just pound and pound. They're up 34-0. And here's the thing, I'm watching the game and I'm able to just actually sit there and watch
Yeah.
it, just relax.
I was going to
And
ask you, I didn't know how to react. I
I
didn't
didn't know
know.
either. I
I
didn't know what to
turned to a
do.
friend and I said, I honestly don't know how to react because we're going to win. Like to
Yeah.
know that we're going to win. Like you would watch Super Bowls, especially in the 80s when there would always be blowouts and they were boring games. I'm sure people watched the game were like, this is boring. That was some, the greatest 3 hours of my life just to
Oh my
watch
God,
them
yeah.
totally dismantle a team.
The first Super Bowl was sheer joy. The second one was pure spite. It was just
Yes.
spite and
And that
just.
is, and that is how you know you're from this area because,
Yeah.
as much as I'm talking up Philadelphia and the areas around Philadelphia, we still have that spitefulness in us. Like,
Oh
screw
God,
that.
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to offend anybody, but it was belt to ass, basically.
Yeah.
And it's great. It was great. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it was good. The only thing that upset me is when is Sirianni, I thought, took the starters out too much. I didn't like the fact
Yeah, it looks
40 to
closer than
20,
it is. It was a
something
two,
like
yeah.
that. It shouldn't have been, it wasn't that close. It wasn't even close to being that, but I loved it because I wanted the Chiefs to eat it, and that the way they shouldn't have won the first one. And I wanted Andy Reid to eat it for ruining some way of our playoff series, and then going to this team and lucking out into this quarterback, and all of a sudden winning Super Bowls. How dare he win Super Bowls with another team after he couldn't coach his ass from a hole in the ground for what, 15 years, when he got to the big games with us, and all of a sudden he's winning Super Bowls. How dare he? So I was so happy. I wish it had been 50-0. That's what I wanted. I wanted that, but
The funny thing is, we're saying, we've won two, and as fans, we've mellowed out. But we know that in a month and a half from now, we will be bitching about a fumble or a missed call.
yep.
Or if we're 1-1, we'll be saying, what the hell is wrong with this team? I can't
Yep.
believe this. We suck. Fire
Yep.
Nick Sirianni. Let's go.
What do you think about Sirianni? If anybody's still listening, Nick Sirianni is the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
What do
So,
I think? I
what do
think
you
he's
think
the
of
right coach for this team,
him?
but
Yes.
I have a feeling that within 2 to 3 years, Sean Mannion, who is the offensive coordinator, will be the head coach of the
That's
Eagles.
entirely possible.
Plus, I love to have the coach that everybody else hates. I love it
Yes,
when
that's
I
the other
can.
part.
Yep.
I love that, Andy Reid has to always think of the guy who the Chiefs are trying to win three Super Bowls in a row, and the guy that took him that from him is a guy who looks like he works over at Pat's in the back, like putting the whiz on. And you can go down the list of all these genius coaches. He's beaten all of them. So when it matters, especially when it matters most, pretty much. I think they're going to have a good team. I don't know why everybody's sort of down on them. I think it's just fun to be down on Philly teams in general. I think it's like, especially for the national press, I think it's fun to just sort of whatever.
And
I
for
don't care.
Philadelphia with W with the sports talk radio, that's what
Yeah.
drives callers and ratings. They
Yeah.
all listen to sports talk more when I was a teenager and 20s. Now I listen to podcasts mostly, but so I agree with
Yeah,
you. And
I
it's
agree.
it's Philadelphia, so they're mostly going to talk about the Eagles. It doesn't matter when. They're going to talk about the Eagles year
Yep.
round. So as I said to my son, I'm enjoying being relevant and the Eagles being good
Sure.
every year because I lived through it like you did, where you're brought up in your family to root for the Eagles, good, bad. They're like a family
Yep.
member who screws up, but you got to keep taking them back because they're part of the family. And right now, they're not screwing up. We're going through a good
Exactly.
patch, and
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy that.
Oh, that was good. That was good stuff. I apologize to my listeners. Did you have anything else you wanted to complain about with the Eagles before we
No,
were done with
I
that part?
mean,
You
right
sure?
now, we're in the middle of the Philly season, so I could go on another hour complaining about
Oh
the Phillies,
God,
but
don't tell me about them.
we're not going to do
No, we're not going to do them. Oh jeez. That team
that.
drives me nuts. All right. Well, it's closing time.
It's like we're the last two at the bar.
Yeah, basically. The last two at the bar. They're like
We're two
the
crazy old
lounge.
men talking about
Yeah.
sports.
Yeah, the lounge is like, "Boss, we really want to close up. Can we do that?" And they're like, "Yeah, sorry. Just give me the keys. You guys can get out of here." It is closing time. So Mike, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. Where can
I want to thank you for having me on. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Why don't you tell everybody in the lounge where can people find you?
They can find me, and I was talking to Brett beforehand. I have a podcast called the Pop Culture Basement Podcast, and it's basically what I was just talking about. I grew up watching sports in my basement in Southwest Philadelphia, but I also grew up watching movies in my basement. I grew up watching TV, reading comics, reading books, just ingesting all kinds of pop culture in my basement, in my aunt's basement, who lived 2 doors away, watching movies on Prism. I don't know if you remember
Oh,
Prism,
of course I
Brett.
remember Prism. Absolutely.
Yes, my parents didn't have it. This was before we even had cable. But yeah, my podcast, Pop Culture Basement Podcast, I talk about all of the pop culture that I grew up with. Different guests on. I've had a couple of guests who've been on the Fire and Water podcast. Now I've had Andy Leyland on, talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I've had Henry Bernstein on a couple times, talking about the animated Hobbit. Right now, I just released a mailbag episode that was just all the comments I received over the last season that I had just done. And I'm going to be starting up season 4 within the next few weeks. And instead of just the Pop Culture Basement, it is actually Pop Culture Basement Podcast Network, which means I have had, much like this network, where a bunch of people would come on and everybody kind of became friends over their shared love of all this stuff. I have had a couple of people who have guested on my shows, who some of them had never done podcasts before. Some of them had done podcasts before, but, you know, they just want to flex their creative muscles. And we're going to try to just have a bunch of different shows. We don't have everything planned out yet. Right now, the network is basically the Pop Culture Basement Podcast, and I have another show called Sleazebag Cinema, which celebrates movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that you kind of you can't make anymore. We have an episode coming out very soon about National Lampoon's Vacation. If you look for us, and that was right after I got done my vacation, I saw a lot of parallels between that. So I had to do an episode on that.
Still holds up, absolutely.
Yes, especially now. But yeah, if you look on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, we are on all the places you find your podcasts. You can look for me on Facebook, on Blue Sky, on Twitter, because I don't call it the other thing, because that would just be silly. Instagram, because all the cool kids are doing it on Instagram, mm-hmm. and Threads. Just look for Pop Culture Basement Podcast, or look for Sleazebag Cinema. You can look for me. My handle on Twitter is This Lightsaber Kills Fascists. And you can also just look for me on Facebook under Pop Culture Basement Podcast, or just under Mike Jamison. And I would love it if people gave us a listen. I mean, I always say whenever I've talked to Rob and other people on the network that this network was an inspiration for me to start up podcasts, just because I enjoyed everything that you guys were doing. And yeah, I just want to thank you again for having me on, getting to talk about the Eagles. I cannot wait to see the comments for this episode. Yeah, I think for any of your listeners out there who like you talk about on this show and mm-hmm. everybody else, come by the Pop Culture Podcast Basement and check us out, because I think you'll like the stuff there also.
Well, thanks again, Mike, and we will be right back.
Do you worship at the Church of Zemed? Do you still think teenagers should look like they're in their mid-40s? If you gained magical powers, would you use them to sexually harass a woman? Well, if your answer is a resounding yes, do we have a podcast for you. Sleazebag Cinema with Andrew and Mike. We're doing a deep dive into questionable 80s flicks starring some of pop culture's most beloved icons. How in the hell did they avoid being canceled? Join Mike and Andrew for a peek through the peephole to find out. Sleazebag Cinema. Episode 1 coming soon to all respectable podcast platforms.
We're back. Here is the feedback from episode 21 with Siskoid featuring Godzilla and a Brandy sidecar. Geechee Baker says, another great episode, Brett. Excellent discussion around the comic I have no desire to read. However, the podcast with Siskoid was riveting. Thanks for entertaining me. Also, Bone Tomahawk is a fantastic movie. Modern Westerns are always hit or miss. That one is a unique story that made it stand out. FW Godfather, host of Fade Out and sometimes Treasury Cast, Rob Kelly says, it was either Brett or Godzilla or both that brought out a side of Siskoid that I don't think I've quite ever seen or heard before, despite co-founding a network with him a decade ago. Even as a kid, I was never that big on Godzilla. I watched the movies when they would air on local TV, but they never resonated with me the way, say, the Universal Monsters did. So the Marvel comic was not a big draw for me either. I watched the Saturday morning cartoon, Godzuki, but that may have been due to laziness and simply not wanting to change the channel. I had to walk all the way across the room. But I did enjoy using my Shogun Warriors to battle the 2-foot Godzilla action figure that my friend had. Those were some titanic clashes back in the day. Travis Morgan says, welcome, Travis. I don't think, is this your first time? Maybe? First time, long time? I'm not sure. Another great episode. I love the Marvel Godzilla series, which introduced me to S.H.I.E.L.D. with them, chasing after Godzilla. Bought the Godzilla Omnibus as soon as it came out. I also bought the Micronauts and ROM, which were other licensed series of that era. I was surprised both you and Siskoid did not mention the film tangents that I thought were obvious. I don't think you guys listened to the Film and Water podcast. Neither of you pointed out the characters of Mr. Ford and Mr. Hawks probably took their names from John Ford and Howard Hawks, two of the greatest directors of Westerns in the golden age of Hollywood. You both also did not mention the Ray Harryhausen classic Valley of the Gwangi from 1969, which pits cowboys against dinosaurs. I remember watching it on my local creature feature show back in the day. Now, Siskoid replied to Travis, or he may have caught The Beast of Hollow Mountain in 1956. It was the one I was struggling to name and so didn't. Obviously, it's all been done. Gothos Mansion says, Brett, thank you for the show. It was a fun listen, combining two of my favorite things, comic books and Godzilla. Travis mentioned Valley of the Gwangi. I assume I'm pronouncing that right, by the way, guys. Gwangi, apologies if I'm not. And I think Doug Mensch probably watched it not long before penning this issue. As for Herb Trimpe's Godzilla being a little off-model, Godzilla's look changed from film to film back then, so I don't think that bothered me as a kid. At the time of the Godzilla comic, the only films that existed were the Show-era ones. With those and the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, many of us 70s kids' default thought was of Godzilla as a hero. I don't remember seeing the first two films in the series when Godzilla was a straight-up villain airing on TV back then. The Godzilla movie that aired the most in the southeastern U.S. seemed to be Godzilla vs. Gigan. One of those, hopefully, under the title Godzilla on Monster Island. Yeah, no one else seemed to love that one, but I think it's dynamite. How can you not love a green bird with ruby shades, hooks for hands, and a buzzsaw in his belly? Plus King Ghidorah, I think, and my man, Anguirus? Co-star. I felt sorry for Anguirus because he got his ass kicked in every movie. If I may be sleazy, sigh, Yuriko Hishima, sigh, she made my young heart beat a little faster. My favorite Godzilla movie is still 1974's Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. Since you asked, I got an energized Spider-Man for Christmas. He was battery operated. He quit working long ago, but he's still in my closet. I also have the Shogun Warriors branded Godzilla figure. I may have even gotten them at the same Christmas to simulate Godzilla's fire. You pull the lever on the back of the head and what looked like a tongue with flames on it jutted out. Ah, the 70s. Yeah, I had that Godzilla tip. Even as a kid, I found it weird that Godzilla Viewmaster reels featured artwork from Marvel Comics and not photos from the movies. Bucky749 says, now to quote a song, I'm back in black. I've been meaning to check out the classic Godzilla comics, and this seems like a fun one. April 9th is my birthday. Happy belated birthday, Bucky. So April is Western month on my channel because we love Westerns in my house. Here's my fantastic question. In one of those comics, Godzilla got shrunk and put on a trench coat and fedora, the Marvel Universe's greatest disguise. What if Godzilla, classic Kong, modern Kong, Mothra, and Hercules came into the Fantastalliance for lunch because we know Hercules gets along with everyone and Herc would arm wrestle the Kongs? First of all, if they all came in, I would demand that they go outside to arm wrestle because I know what's going to happen. And my guess is they all seem like burger and chicken wing guys, so I'm sure we just pile up some of that and again leave it outside for them. Fantastalounge regular Dr. Ant says, great episode for many reasons. I am sort of a side Godzilla fan, watching as much as I can, but without the passion / knowledge of Siskoid. As a fan of Hideki Anno and Neon Genesis, I really love Shin Godzilla, so I would love to hear more about Siskoid's opinion outside of the side comments he made. I'm sure I could search his blog to find it. I did buy the random Marvel Godzilla book off the rack when I saw it. This was how I learned about the champions and first met Iceman and the Angel. This one is a complete hoot. Cowboys look like gnats in front of the kaiju. I like the recent DC Godzilla series the way I like Saturday afternoon popcorn flicks. Pure fun. I also have never seen that human fly ad. It's seeing him in a rocket skateboard playing an electric guitar supposed to make me buy the book back then? I don't know, but it looks absolutely fantastic now. I want that as a poster. How could neither of you have a Hostess fruit pie, the best of the Hostess treats. Yeah, I don't know, Ange. It just never came around for me. And I also like Bone Tomahawk for the gruesome, tough watch it was. I don't know if I need to see it again, but it struck a chord. Siskoid replied to Ange regarding pies. In my case, it's geography. Shin Godzilla, I still stand by my review, which you can read in the comment section. And you can read it in the comment section if you want to check that out. Edo Boznar says, good show. I had a little over half of the Marvel run of Godzilla. I had been a fan of the Godzilla films a few years earlier, but at that point, I was not as big a fan. And I honestly recall finding the whole series a bit underwhelming. Yet for some reason, as with Team America a little later, I picked it up regularly month after month. Your conversation has given me a new appreciation, at least for this particular issue. Thanks, Edo. Super Captain says, I'm not a big fan of Godzilla, but I did read and enjoy the recent DC vs. Godzilla miniseries. As Dr. Ant says above, it's a good widescreen super battle story. I did see Godzilla vs. Bambi way back in my college days as part of a collection of animated shorts. Godzilla vs. Charles Barkley originated from an old Nike commercial, and an SNL did hilarious parody with Charles Barkley versus other reptilian celebrity Barney. As always, a great listen from Brett and Siskoid. Thanks, man. Big Frank says, just finished up the latest episode on a run. Well done. Interesting venue for Godzilla. Utah? Maybe he was upset that the New Orleans Jazz didn't change their name when they moved to Salt Lake. So, completely understandable. 1,000 cows for Godzilla doesn't seem out of the realm, especially when you describe him as chunky. Maybe he only ate one per month, like Tolga's Oscar fish. Now that is an inside joke. I think a great drink would have been a flaming Dr. Pepper to go along with Godzilla's fire. You know, Frank, I did consider at one point doing a flaming Dr. Pepper. Maybe we will down the road. I think it would have to be someone I did in person because I wouldn't want to risk somebody setting themselves on fire from across a Zoom. Nate the Great says, I remember this Godzilla comic. It was one of the more unusual ones, even though my favorite was the one where they fought the champions. Plus, as a kid, I thought it was weird that the comic did not include Godzuki. Siskoid responded to that saying, I was horrified when I got into the proper films to find the horrendous Manila in the Godzuki role. All right. Thank you to all who listen. And before I get into it, I just wanted to point out, I wanted to apologize to Mike Jamison, my guest. For some reason, his audio did not come out very well. I think that had to do something on my end. I did my best. I apologize for the poor quality and always strive to make this as enjoyable a listen as possible. This was not on Mike. This had to do with something on my end. So again, I apologize for that. Mike was a great guest. It was wonderful having him. So thank you to all who listened. Be sure to subscribe to the Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. The Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of the Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Please let me know what you think of the show. I read all feedback at the end of every episode. Follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network. Blue Sky at FW Podcasts, Instagram at Fire and Water Podcasts. Use our hashtag online at hashtag FW Podcasts. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Mike Jamison for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge and talking a lot of sports. Sorry, guys. Until next time, the bar is open.